Blog Talk Radio.
Hello and welcome to Action Radio. This is Greg Penglis coming to you from the historic district of downtown Milton on the banks of the beautiful Blackwater River. And now let's get into Action Radio.
It's going to be a busy day today. It's going to be a very busy day, but we have 3 hours, so we're extending our show already. I wanted to try out before we got to Monday. And so Monday we're going to go to 6 o'clock to 9 o'clock Central, 7 to 10 Eastern. And so hopefully this will get – it'll be more show, first of all, so you have an extra hour of Action Radio. We're not going to feel so compressed and so rushed as we try and get through guests and reporters, because the show's growing. The show's growing ridiculously fast right now, which is wonderful. You know, I couldn't be happier. It's nice to see something that you start, you know, keep going. And so that's incredible news. As far as reporters go, they might be changing schedules. You know, I hope to get more reporters, you know, in that first hour. There'll be a lot of discussion. I figure it'll take a little while for people to catch on, especially in the East Coast. But those folks that couldn't listen because we started at 8 o'clock their time, like this morning, it's a little tougher for them because they're probably on their way to work or already there. And so this will give people an extra chance. And the West Coast, you know, it will be 6 to 9, which is 4 to 7. Their time. And so I'm guessing, you know, if the folks that aren't awake at 4 o'clock, you know, whenever they get up, they'll catch the live show for a couple hours, you know, 1 or 2 hours. Then of course they can get the podcast the first hour, you know, after the live show. It'll be a little bit disjointed, but they can certainly do that. Let's bring Gene on the conversation. Gene, our wonderful producer, resource person, you know, look up person extraordinaire for all the different things that we talk about during the show. We get instant information, and plus call screening, live chat, and everything else. So, Gene, good morning. What's going on?
Good morning. Well, I'm anxiously awaiting the Arizona audit results. I was listening to something earlier today, and I don't know if they were joking around, but they said, well, it's going to show that Biden won by even more votes. I don't care
that. And what drugs were they taking? Was this an LSD trip or what? I mean, that's definitely now the crack news report from the LSD crew here at WLSD Radio.
Yeah. So I'm curious to see what they have to say and then what happens after that. Yeah.
Well, I mean, they've been preparing their disinformation for months. As soon as the audit was announced,
You
know that the engineers, the people, and here's the problem: the Democrats are really good at this. They're really good at lying. They lie without a conscience. They're compulsive. I forgot what the word is for that in psychology, but people that absolutely, you know, sociopathic lying is probably the closest thing, because they don't care. I mean, they absolutely don't care. It's about power. I mean, they lied about everything. They lied about with Trump. Is legendary in terms of whoppers, you know. So there's probably a Democrat Department of Whoppers, you know, to like who can tell the biggest lie, and they've been saying that it's not a real audit. What are some of the other good ones that Biden's already president, he can't do anything about it. And I'll get to that question in a minute, because that takes a bunch of different forms. It actually came up on the show yesterday, and that question is the basis of the show for today. And so it's funny how these things kind of spin off each other. But this whole idea that they're going to contest everything. And, you know, what does Shakespeare say? Methinks I'll protest too much. You know, it's like the louder they scream, the louder they scream, you can't do an audit. The more you want to do an audit, because, you know, the more they're hiding. I mean, it's like inversely proportional. Is it a term that in psychology? I mean, other than projection, when they try to accuse you of something, but what happens when people who know they're guilty, yell even louder to accuse you that you can't do it. You can't look there. Is there a word for that, or is that just, or am I just kind of, we just have to describe it?
Well, that is projection. Yeah. Okay. When there's something when you're doing something, but you're saying someone else is doing it.
Yeah.
Or feeling
But I'm thinking about the guilt complex. Well, not the guilt, but the idea that the defense is you can't look there. Their defense is, well, he's already president. We got away with it. It's like a bank robber saying, look, I've already got the money. You know, it's too late to arrest me. I've got it, and I've already spent half of it. You know, you can't touch me now. I mean, it's that same kind of mentality that if you get away with it, it's okay.
It sounds like the whole Biden administration so far, everything they've been through. Look at the border. But the border is okay. The border's closed. It's like, are you kidding me? I mean, Saki should be, you know, she shouldn't even have these conferences because she never tells the truth. It's like, And if the reporters had more cahoots, they'd speak up, because there's no reason for that. It's like they say, the border is closed. Look at this. I mean, it's a tragedy what continues to go down there. It's just, oh, it's so sad.
You know, if we just characterize her as Biden's liar. See, the problem is conservatives, Republicans, independents, libertarians, you know, they don't know how to use language. I mean, they really don't. You know, and this is why I think I'm hoping that the GOP will someday realize the folly in their way and pay us a gazillion dollars for writing their talking points, which we could easily do on the show. And we give them far better material than they come up with themselves. But, I mean, the first thing I would say is, you know, Psaki has to be characterized as Biden's liar every time. Biden's liar today said, you know, I mean, just put that right in. Just put that right into the language, and don't even think about it. You know, I mean, I talk about freedom rifles instead of assault weapons. I never say assault weapon. And I just put it right in. I never say Biden administration. And I'm not picking on you for this, because it happens all the time. But as far as I'm concerned, if you say Biden administration, if anybody says that, you're acknowledging the coup as legitimate. If you say President Biden, you're acknowledging the coup as legitimate. It's the Biden coup, the Biden regime, the Biden installation, the imposter in chief, the thief in chief. You can call him anything you want, as far as I'm concerned. And this is a personal thing. But I really hope that people just get out of that pattern. And it's not President Biden, and it's not the Biden administration, because that acknowledges that what they did was okay and that they can stay there. And that you're trying to unseat the administration. Language is very powerful. We're going to talk about that today, too, as we get into our topic of why Biden can be removed constitutionally. So I always call him Biden, you know, or something else like that. Does that make sense, Jean? Do you see how the language reinforces the beliefs?
Yeah, that totally makes sense. And then another thing that went on, and I didn't listen to this too closely, but AOC again, it's like, oh, come on, New Yorkers. I would think you'd have more common sense than that. But I guess with election rigging, that explains it all. But the thing is, with her crying because of the vote yesterday, and if I got it right, she didn't even vote. She put present. I have to check
maybe
more.
Maybe she
that,
wanted a present. Maybe she was voting for a present.
Know.
She wanted a present. Yeah.
But if you have such strong feelings, why do you vote present? But as I said, I have to check into that.
Oh,
that's just
that.
Another thing I heard today.
Yeah.
And I'm just like, are you kidding? It's like, but anything for a moment in the spotlight, that's what they're out for. And it's like, are they interested in this country? No. I mean,
not in a
positive way. They don't want to see anybody succeed but themselves. And that's not what America is.
Well, you know, and that's a good find. That's a good find on your part, just finding that she voted president. So nice job there. What was the vote specifically? Are we talking about the infrastructure bill, or what did they vote on yesterday?
No, with Israel.
What was the vote? I missed this one. Was it a resolution or what?
No. I think what it was, something with I'd have to go back and look. I thought it had to do something with giving them money or something like that.
Was it the Iron Dome $1 billion for their Iron Dome missiles? We talked about that in the show yesterday.
Oh, gosh. I don't know. I don't know.
Wait for me to start rambling incoherently.
Out,
and then you'll,
she was
when I start rambling.
She was devastated because she don't want nothing to do with Israel, and neither does the squad.
Well, and Claire Lopez made a report yesterday. These people are openly anti-Semitic. They hate Israel, hate Jews. They are, in the case of Rashida Tlaib is Muslim anyway. She's Palestinian, which actually doesn't exist. There is no such thing as Palestine. It's a made up people, and they never had a country. They're Hashemite refugees from Arab countries that nobody wanted. As Claire explained, she can explain better than I can, but there is no Palestinian state. There never was. There never should be. You know, you'd have to create one. You wouldn't be restoring one. You'd be creating one. And that would be the worst possible thing for Israel. And we talked about yesterday, Israel should retake Gaza. You know, it makes sense to not have the Sinai Peninsula anymore. It's a whole bunch of wasteland. but they should definitely retake Gaza and stop that terrorist camp, you know, on their border. But that's, I don't think the government's going to do that. But if you find the vote, like I say, I'll be rambling in a bit, or we'll have a guest in the next hour if you want to, because Jim will start at 8 o'clock. Derek's not with us today. So we don't have our financial report. So I've got some stories I wanted to cover on this new tax proposal that the IRS has to basically raid your bank account for information. So we'll get onto that. So when you get a chance during the show, if you want to look at that Israel vote. But Rashida Tlaib, AOC, which I have now dubbed America's overt communist, AOC. I made that up while you were talking. So here's another one. So we're accumulating acronyms today. We've got Biden's liar. Jen Psaki. We can call her Jen B.L. Psaki, you know, or Jen B.S. Psaki. Maybe I can, you know, Biden's, what's a good word for S for liar? Biden's sociopath. There we go. So Biden's, B.S. Psaki, Biden's sociopath Psaki. You know, we can do that. And America's, you know, overt communist, AOC. And we can have some fun with this. It looks like Pianki wants to join us. Yeah. What were you saying? Go ahead. Yeah.
I said I will look check into it, but I think it has to do with giving them money because there was a Republican from Connecticut that voted no as well because he doesn't want us to get money to anybody. But the thing is, okay, we'll remind him of that later.
Well, that's stupid.
Because, but I will check into it.
Okay. Well, Pianki's on. Let's get him going this morning. Again, we've got the whole hour to us discussion people for today because, like I say, Derek won't make it. But I do have an economic story I'll get to in a bit. And then we'll get to what I wanted to talk about, but we haven't even gotten that far yet. This is what makes this so much fun. Pianki, good morning, sir. Reverend Pianki, welcome to the Friday edition of Action Radio.
Good morning to you and Hank.
Thank you.
You know, one thing that's disturbing me is this ordeal on the border with these Haitians.
Okay.
This is one reason why come that Donald Trump's wall was important. It's because it makes people come through an entry point where they can be inspected and what they're carrying with them can be inspected. Case in point, this picture shows a Custom Border Patrol on horseback, and he didn't pay attention to this. Well, in that kind of terrain, you got to work on horseback. But it shows a Haitian with bags in his hand where he went across into Mexico and acquired food. Well, you cannot bring food into the United States. You can't bring fruit. You can't bring souvenirs. You can't bring agricultural products, whether it's cooked or whether it's fresh. Unless it's inspected, because it may contain pests and organisms, which is detrimental to the United States agricultural industry.
Yeah, no, absolutely, stop. Yeah. Listen, I don't talk about this a whole lot, but I had a brief experience with customs after 9/11. You know, I actually worked for a while as a customs inspector out in San Francisco, and so I remember being taught to do this. This is back when you had three organizations. You had immigration, which was a separate department. You had agriculture, which was a separate department. You had customs, which was separate. Customs was under the Treasury. Agriculture was under the Agriculture Department. And immigration was under the immigration, you know, department. And so these were separate things, but the people had to go through those different inspections. And I learned that. And then they changed everything over to Homeland Security, you know, not that long after I got there. And they trained all these young agents, who do all three things. And they basically had no use for us, you know, Band-Aid people, as I call this. We were there temporarily to sort of hold things over until they trained a whole bunch of new people. Anyway, part of the experience was a lot of people came from different countries, particularly the Philippines, I remember, and they would bring in cooked food. And even though technically it's illegal to do so, people are like, yeah, go ahead, because it was so cultural. Or they'd bring in large amounts of cash. And, of course, anything over $10,000, you know, you want to account for. Those are the old drug thing. But, you know, people from different countries would routinely bring in large amounts of cash. And although I thought it was a stupid idea, it's legal to do so, but we'd usually count it. And, you know, they're supposed to declare it, and sometimes we'd find it, and that's a whole different story, too. But so there's a lot of things that I'll give you a little insight into customs. Or Homeland Security. When I was actually working this, what I found was that the paperwork, if you found something, was so extreme that it wasn't worth doing the hours of paperwork for one person. So a lot of stuff gets let through, and that's wrong. So because, you know, it's like the burden is so great to actually account for this stuff that a lot of times you're being even told by your supervisors, let it go. You know, and so there's a lot of stuff
coming in
the airports and things.
Here's another thing, too, Greg.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Here's another thing. When you're on a plane, I don't know if Gene ever experienced, when you're on a plane on an international flight coming back into the country on a ship or even on an airplane, if you ever flew your private plane into Bermuda or Barbados, the first thing you go through customs.
Yep.
You have to fill out a declaration telling you what you got, where you've been.
Yep.
If you've been in a country and you've been around cattle, or you've been around pests or crops, they want to know.
Mm-hmm.
And if you don't put it on the declaration and they find it, then you penalize. They fine you.
Oh, yeah.
But if you've been around cattle, they would take you in a room and they would make you take your clothes off and they'll wash them. Yeah, check your hair, check your fingernails, check your shoes.
I think it depends where you come from.
You can bring things back into this country that could be harmful to our industries.
Oh, yeah, anthrax and all kinds of other things, hoof and mouth disease. Yeah, well, absolutely. And so we're trained to look for that. I don't remember anybody ever having their clothes washed. I remember a lot of shoes being sprayed, and it actually wasn't that big a deal. In fact, we appreciated people that came forward and said, yeah, I was on a farm. I was out and I was wandering around the dirt, you know, of such and such country. And it's like, okay. So we just, you know, take it to them to an inspection room, spare their shoes, and, you know, away you go. And, of course, you do an inspection of their luggage and things like that to make sure there wasn't a bunch of stuff being brought in. But a lot of people don't know that. So the point I think you're getting to is that people crossing the border are bringing in every kind of food, agriculture, pest, fruit fly, disease, fungus, parasite, you know, everything you can think of is probably crossing our border right now. Is that what you're getting to?
And it could be terrorists. Terrorists don't necessarily have to come into the country willing AK-47s. They could be willing an agriculture pest that can do havoc to your crops in the United States. Which would call in turn your prices to go up at the supermarket or even be out of certain things.
Mm-hmm. Well, here's what's interesting, too.
Another point, too.
Okay, go ahead.
Another point, too. In those encampments where they don't have toilet facilities, those people are defecating on the ground, urinating on the ground. Well, the same thing can be happening. You can have larvae. You can have parasites that can spread throughout a agriculture region and cause havoc.
Yeah, you've also got all the airborne and waterborne diseases like cholera, typhoid, the plague. You know, I mean, all these things could be resurfacing, and all the things that we normally had gotten rid of. Well, this is national suicide that they're doing right now. And the national suicide by the gelding old party for not stopping it, and the national suicide of the Democrat Marxists for instigating it. Shame on the Supreme Court, shame on the Congress. You know, shame on all these folks who are not doing their jobs, who are not protecting this country, who are not doing what they're elected to do. And I'll get into why we can impeach the whole lot of them. Impeachment is actually a lot broader power than I originally suspected once I started looking into it a little bit. And, so there are huge problems. What they are doing now is so criminal. And people aren't looking at the effects of this. You know, they're seeing people crossing the border. But what the news really should be doing, and I'm going to start to look at this around here, is what's happening when these people get wherever they're going. You know, who's taking
me,
what's happening? You know, I mean, I want to find out. In fact, I need a list of the NGOs, the non-government organizations like Catholic Charities. That's the only one I know of. But I want to find out who are these organizations.
They need to be reprimanded. And listen,
they need to be asset forfeited. They need to have their entire organization seized.
Vice president, what she said. She needs to be impeached if there's such a thing. She's
don't have
talking
a vice
about
president.
Removing.
Yeah.
Kamala Harris.
Oh, okay.
She's talking
the
about
imposter.
Well, whatever, Greg. But it's what she's saying that's very detrimental and reveals that what she's doing is illegal, and it's also putting the country at risk because the safeguards we have that was caught on camera is there to keep the country safe, and she's talking about removing that.
Of course. So are you talking about the incident with the Border Patrol person that was trying to was on horseback and was trying to, you know, catch an illegal alien?
You got black groups and black radio stations, they talking about how horrible that is. It reminds them of slavery, but what they don't know what the heck they're looking at. They're looking at the Customs, Border and Protection doing exactly what they're supposed to do in order to protect the United States. The United States is not under threat just from people wielding guns and swords. It also can be biological, as we just got through explaining.
Oh, absolutely. But here's what's interesting, though. If you're comparing this to slavery, I mean, people tried to get out of slavery. They're trying to get into the country. that's an invalid comparison.
Yeah.
That's irrational. Think about it. You know, and not everything goes back to slavery. You know, and if you really want to talk about stuff, let's talk about trench warfare in World War One. You want to talk about suffering? Yeah, let's talk about company towns. Let's talk about the miners, you know, the coal dust. You know, these are people who weren't slaves, but, you know, in many ways were killed off. Whereas slaves, you know, the slave owners wanted to protect their investment. You know, black slave owners too.
Well,
let's talk about that.
Own, some people got their own form of slavery. Now, you remember yesterday I told you about how the news media was going to start attacking Florida's new Surgeon General that defends the black doctor from the Nigerian American. Were they doing just that?
You mean the black guy?
I was reading an article in Atlantic Black Star, which is a black media, and this is what it reads. Florida Governor Ron DeSantis accused of playing games as he selects black doctor, I get this, who opposes vaccine and masks. Well, when you listen to...
Where's the word mandate? Did they forget the word mandate? I think they forgot
They left the word mandate out of there. They did it intentionally in order to create emotions. He never said that. He said he was against mandates. He never said he was against vaccines.
Oh, don't let the truth get in the way of a good narrative, Bianchi.
that's
your
I'm
problem.
About. This is what the news played, and you got your CNN, and I keep telling you guys, you got these black organizations that are just as racist as anybody else, but oh no, nobody wants to accept that and want to call them out.
Well, you know, I want to hear more stories like that because I'm not familiar with black media, or what it sounds like is black supremacist media is what they're talking about, you know, and they've got their agenda. They've got Marxist, you know, intentions there. They want to get rid of anything that, allows people freedom and freedom from, nobody stopped from getting a vaccine, you know, and the funny thing is those of us that want this to be optional, you know, I'm trying to advise people not to do it. I don't recommend it based on my information. I think it's, you know, suicidal in many ways, especially when they start releasing more variants, more agents that are going to really play havoc with these people. It's sort of like a dual stage bioweapon. First is the virus and the vaccine, and they work together really, you know, mess people up, and a lot of people are dying because of it. But would I stop someone from getting it? I mean, I can't, you know, and quite frankly, I wouldn't want to. You have the right to do really stupid things in this country. You know, people die of drug overdoses all the time, you know, even when the drugs are illegal. So, you know,
Another thing I wanted to mention, too, on international flights coming back into the United States, there was a time just before you crossed the bay there, the stewardess will walk down the aisles in the plane and release an aerosol in the vents that would encompass the cabin.
Right.
Well, what that was doing was sanitizing the people who may have been around pests or may have been around cattle and all sorts of things like that. They don't do that anymore, I don't think.
Well, I'm not sure. I remember when I was a kid, when I flew to Australia for the first time, I was like, you know, 5 years old. And I remember, I'll never forget, my first memory of being in Australia, you know, first of all, it's Qantas, which is a really cool airline. But the flight attendant, the steward, a guy, you know, as soon as we touched down and we're taxiing in, he had these two aerosol cans that smelled like, you know, Raid. So he goes down, he has one in each hand. He's walking down the aisle spraying the vents. Spraying the overhead luggage compartments, which were open in those days. I don't think they were. Well, I'm not sure. I guess they had to have been locked. I'm 5 years old, but he just walked down the aisle spraying. I thought, what the hell's that doing? You know, I remember asking my folks, why is he doing that? You know, it seemed to be. It was like they were following a protocol that they knew was ineffective. It was kind of stupid, but they were required to do it anyway. You know, the checks are much better, but people I think were more responsible than when they traveled. And they would declare things, and it's like, yeah, they've been to a farm, okay. Now people don't care. They'll just lie just so they can get through customs faster. And they don't realize the impact of what they're doing. You know, pretty soon we'll have goats on our airplanes, too, because of all our
things
that are here. You know, we have livestock flights.
You have black organizations and groups going to Del Rio and saying what's happening to the Haitian. It's racism. It ain't racism. It's a required performance that's supposed to be done when you're dealing with illegals. They should have
now,
came
why would they do
interest.
That? Do they want more
They do it to
patience?
Cause a bunch of crap, Greg. Okay. That's exactly what it is.
Huh.
You got to call it what it is. All it is a bunch of BLM type of responses and emotion gathering to create a certain effect and an outcry. That's what the left does. They take something and they just create it into where people just go out of their mind when they see it. And that's exactly what you got. People are calling this is likened to slavery. People are calling this is immoral, it's unhuman. But it's legal. That's how you protect your borders.
Yeah. You know, it's interesting. The same people that are calling racism for stopping illegal Haitians from crossing our border are very pro-abortion. And I find the hypocrisy fascinating, that if you really want to save black lives, one of the best ways to do it is to discourage abortion as much as possible. Because what, I remember some staggering figure that the black population in this country would be double what it is now, if not for abortion. So you want to talk about saving black lives. You don't have to import illegal aliens into our country. You know, we could have plenty of good, loyal Americans, you know, by simply allowing them to live. You know, and that's never really talked about. Go ahead.
The funny thing about it is that these foreigners, Haitians and Africans, don't look at black Americans the way black Americans think they should be looked at. Anything that they see, any person that they see whose skin is not lily white, they think that they are black. Haitians and Africans do not label themselves using that word. They either label themselves by a nationality or a language group, not by using the word black.
You know, and they probably don't use they come here and they hear African American and they probably look at black Americans and so, what connection do you have with Africa? You know, I wonder what Dr. Lapoto would say about that, or Lapido. I got to work on his name. I'm terrible at names, but yeah, you know, and in Africa too, you know, when so many, I mean, how many, I don't know how many million black people are in Africa, but to call yourself black in Africa would be kind of crazy, you know, because that's not a distinction. That makes no sense. Cause you were talking yesterday about ethnic groups, about nationalities and all the different ways. I mean, there are many different, you know, groupings, cultures, tribes, ancestries, nationalities in Africa, you know, and just to say black is almost meaningless. In fact, it pretty much is meaningless. That's a good point.
Well, you don't have to go to Africa. You can go down to Jamaica. Those Jamaicans are not African. They are a distinct group.
Mm-hmm.
When they move here, they don't move in the hood.
Yeah. Do you see, I know we talked to Josie about this too, whereas, you know, you can't, saying Hispanic is just as bad. And just as ignorant, because you've got Cuban, Argentinian, Venezuelan, Honduran, you know, Costa Rican, you know, Spanish, you know, European Spanish, you know, the people, the nations that speak Spanish, and even the Brazil, which is, you know, speaks Portuguese. You've got as many different nationalities, cultures, groupings as you can think of, you know, throughout the what we would call the Latin American world, which is kind of a stupid term too, because none of them speak Latin, as far as I know, is to say black. You know, to describe Africans, Jamaicans, Haitians, you know, it's like these worlds. It's almost a way to dismiss the individuality of all these different nations, cultures, you know, ancestries, you know, and just put a single skin color on it. It's, to me, it's like the most racist, one of the most racist things you can do, to actually limit people by their skin color and not get the richness of who they are. You know, I had a friend of mine, you know, went to junior high. He was Jamaican, and he says, "I'm not black." He says, I'm not African-American. I said, I'm Jamaican. So I know exactly what you're talking about, because I've known folks, you know, friends of mine that this guy in particular, that's how I felt. I had a friend of mine in Australia who was Samoan, you know, and I didn't realize he was black until I came to the United States, because I'd never heard the term. We didn't think of that, you know, when I was a kid in Australia. And I've talked about this before. Race was not something that ever entered our heads, because we all wore the same school uniform. We were all equal. It's who you were, because we had kids from all over the world in my school. And so skin color, really, we didn't even think of that. It just, it never registered on our brains that that was even a thing. We didn't know what race was or the definition. So it's very strange when I hear all
well,
these things going on here. Yeah.
That's peculiar to the United States. And it started off with dark chocolate. Now it went up to white chocolate. And where it ends, nobody knows. You know, I often ask people, what is Derek Jeter? Look at it. He's white. But his father is black. Go to show you how much sense it makes.
Well, it's interesting. It's like Obama, you know, has a white mother and a black father. Okay, so, you know, but he's doing everything he can to claim blackness for some reason, because he thinks that it'll either benefit him more. He wants that identity, you know, and in this country, you know, right now it's not cool to be white. it's nothing special. It's like, it's just, well, okay, you're what? You're an oppressor. You know, you're whatever it is. And, of course, all these poor white kids that are being, I mean, poor in the sense of disadvantaged, you know, mentally oppressed, thinking that they're oppressors. You know, it's a real tragedy what's going on.
Yeah.
Huh. Okay.
Okay, well, I'll hang back and listen to the show.
Well, that sounds good. Yeah, you're welcome. We got 3 hours today, so feel free to join us at any point.
3 hours? Oh, my goodness.
Oh, I know.
Do we have time to take off for lunch?
Well, you should bring your lunch. In fact, you know, bring your coffee. You know, tell me. We should do like the coffee club. You know, for the last hour of the show is, you know, and say, oh, what are you guys drinking? Oh, I got my espresso mocha. Okay, cool. We'll do a coffee show one day. All right, let me see if I can wake you guys up.
Well, hold on just a second. I wanted to add.
Hold it.
A bit later.
Action Radio, dangerously cool. Okay, Gene, you were saying?
Yeah, I just wanted to ask, what happened to One Nation Under God? It's like we've forgotten that. Everything is such a racial issue now, and I don't know really how it got to be the extreme it is, because, I mean, I don't think it's, I don't know, maybe I live in a bubble, but I don't think it's like that. The people I know are not racist. It's like they're tolerant of, doesn't matter what skin.
Well, how do you know they're not racist? You know, the racists say that if you say you're not racist, that proves you're racist. I mean, that's a fact.
Then I guess we're all racist.
No, actually, we're not. You know, but that's what the racists say. That's why I qualified that. But you'll get that is like the racist trap. This is why you don't engage people to talk about that. I remember when I was accused by a Black Lives Matter, you know, host on Blog Talk Radio. And I kind of forced him into it. It was kind of sneaky. I said, go ahead. I dare you to call me a racist. I said, you're a racist. I said, okay, prove it. You know, at the time, I had Pianchi on the line, Josie on the line. I was the only white person on the show at that point. And he calls me the racist, right? It was hysterical. Anyway, let me switch gears completely here.
Hold on.
Something happened on – go ahead.
I got something else. Okay.
Yeah, okay.
So
fine.
It says the House approves $1 billion for the Iron Dome as Democrats viewed over Israel. And
yep.
So that's what it was about. And AOC actually did vote present instead of no. She switched it from no to present. And then she weeped after that when they were having their press conference. So my thinking is, if that was such a big deal for her, she shouldn't have voted present. She should have voted no.
Well, voting present isn't really voting as far as I'm concerned.
Well, exactly. And
that doesn't mean anything. You know, that's a cop-out. So she wants her cake and eat it too. Right? You can't do that. She wants to be able to say she took a stand without taking a stand. It's the non-vote vote. You know, and we talked about this yesterday, and because, you know, people, she wants to be seen as not anti-Israel, but not pro-Israel either. So it's like she's becoming the consummate politician, Ms. AOC, America's overt communist. And so, whereas Rashida Tlaib and Presley and I've forgotten who the other one is, Ilhan Omar, who probably shouldn't even be a citizen, let alone in Congress. So the squad, the communist unit, the distraction, interesting group.
When you look at racists, I think they're the racist group. When
of course
you look
they are.
At what they say and their actions.
Mm-hmm. Well, they're projection racists. If you want to find a racist, look for the first person that raises race. You know, when the first racial accusation usually comes from the biggest racist. You know, and so I call it political racism. You know, you accuse someone of racism falsely to achieve a political objective. Because as Pianchi points out over and over, white people especially will just, you know, bohica, you know, bend over, here it comes again. You know, you're going to get completely screwed over. And we'll do the kneeling thing and all that other kind of crap. And I, you know, first of all, no one's ever asked me to kneel, but I wouldn't do it anyway. You know, and so I always remember Menachem Begin when he was prime minister of Israel. And he says, Jews kneel but to God. You know, that's it. So they're not going to kneel. All right, something happened yesterday on the show. And I want to get into this now. We've got until the top of the hour when Jim Dykes will join us. We'll talk guns for a while. Then our new gun reporter, Donnie Chapman, is going to join us at the bottom of the next hour. And we'll talk guns. In the third hour, who knows? I've got enough articles for, you know, five shows. So we're good. But something happened yesterday. Claire and I got into a discussion of what's going on with the Biden insurrection. And she made the comment, and I think she made it in a way that she assumed that it was going to be, accepted without question. And of course, you know me, that doesn't work. And so she said that there's no constitutional way to remove Joe Biden now that he's there. And I'm like, wait a minute. So it's the 1 hour and 43 mark on yesterday's show. It was a fascinating discussion. And so I got to thinking about it, you know, because I didn't really have a good answer then. And I knew it was constitutional. I just didn't, I hadn't put it all down. So I got a ton of notes here. And I'll see if I can kind of wade my way through this. But the idea to me, and this is what I was arguing yesterday, the idea that someone can steal the presidency and just because it's past inauguration day, they are allowed to stay. That's irrational to me. That's like saying to a, which I love the bank robber example. Slow down, Greg. The bank robber example. You know, if a bank robber steals a whole bunch of money and they spend it and build a business and raise a family and now they're, quote, pillars of society, you know, can you arrest them for bank robbery? Well, yeah, because they stole the money, you know, just because, even if they did, quote, good things with it. You know, it doesn't make sense. You know, and in this case, Biden's doing bad things with it. So the idea that someone can steal the White House in a coup, overthrowing the legitimate government of Donald Trump, and just because it's past inauguration day, we can't remove them just because there's no specific, provision for a coup in the Constitution. That made no sense to me. So, I started arguing with myself and, trying to figure some stuff out. I got some things here that I think you might find interesting, but let's go to Pianki right now. And welcome back to the show, sir. So, yeah, that was quick. Would you get your coffee or what?
Well, we're hanging around listening.
All right. Well, yeah, I'm just going to adjust my seat there. I have one of these old chairs. You know, the gas cylinder is disappearing. So if you hear me making periodic noises, I usually mute myself, but sometimes I don't have time as I'm sinking below my microphone. So I have to kind of set for a new chair. All right. So the question came up, and I wrote some notes down, and so I thought, actually I got a couple today. First of all, don't forget we have a live chat, and we're going to get that going. Gene's on the computer. So if anybody wants to, chat live, that function is available. And so you have to become a listener. Yeah, you got that on? Okay, good. I've got the information for the show. So anybody wants to do it, you go, I think it's the upper left corner of our episode. It has a place to get a free listener account, and then you can do live chat. So you don't have to talk to us if you don't want to. You can just type something in, and Gene will ring the hotel bell. Hey, have you tried the hotel bell yet? Give that a shot.
No, I have not.
Okay. Well, when you get a chance or the appropriate moment, feel free. So anyway, so back to the Constitution. I'm looking over my stuff here. The first thing I wrote down was impeachment provisions. We're talking about impeachment. And it says, well, as Claire raised this and a bunch of folks have raised this too, that all these impeachment provisions are coming out against Obama. Obama, excuse me. That was a slip. Wow. That was accurate. But they're coming out against Biden. And I thought, well, you can't impeach him. He's not president. Okay. How do you impeach an imposter? You don't impeach him. You arrest him. So one way I was sort of walking down this road of constitutionally removing the imposter in chief, the thief in chief, the insurrectionist, the traitor, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, is that you just arrest him, for election fraud and for stealing the White House and overthrowing the legitimate government. Okay. So that's one way to do it. And that isn't, I don't think that's specifically spelled where it's spelled in the Constitution is high crimes and misdemeanors. We'll get to that as we go through this here. But the other one is the electoral count was suspended. It was never effectively taken up. And I'll talk about this. I got more notes on that. And we'll go back to the Sidney Powell article. But January 6th was interrupted. And just because they voted to certify, they could not have voted to certify because they never completed each individual state challenge. So they could not have inaugurated because they couldn't have voted to certify because they didn't have the individual state challenge. So there's a constitutional provision. So I'm going to list, I'll send this to Claire too. It'd be interesting. But there's a bunch of constitutional provisions, all right, that allow for this to happen. Article 2, Section 4. All right. Let me pull that one up. So it's basically Article 2, Section 4 and the Fourth and Fifth Amendments. So let me see if I can make some sense of this as I go through it. Article 2, Section – it's Article 1, Section 4. As I riffle through my pages here, too many pages of the Constitution. Fortunately, the Constitution isn't that long. Excuse me. So it's easy to go through it. Article 2, Section 2 says why the president is not commander-in-chief. We'll talk about that again sometime too. Ah, here we go. Excuse me. The president, vice president, and all civil officers of the United States shall be removed from office on impeachment for and conviction of treason, bribery, or other high crimes and misdemeanors. Okay, let me go over that. This is Article 2, Section 4. Now, I thought just the president was impeached, but apparently, and this is the revelation from yesterday, the president, vice president, and all civil officers, that means the entire judiciary and the entire bureaucracy, all of them, any civil officer can be removed by impeachment and conviction of treason, bribery, or other high crimes and misdemeanors. And the trial and impeachment is in the Congress. The House impeaches and the Senate tries. And so anybody from the lowliest bureaucrat, criminal, high crime, misdemeanor, up through the Supreme Court Chief Justice, up through the president, all of them can be impeached and removed for high crimes and misdemeanors. Right in the Constitution, Article 2, Section 4. So I'm not sure what was it J. Christian Adams, I think, is the legal expert that Claire mentioned. But I'll stake Article 2, Section 4 against Mr. Expert. You know, nothing else clear for him, but as far as, and I couldn't find anything written by him or anybody else that says that it's, there's nothing in the Constitution that, you know, would allow you to remove Biden from his, you know, usurped office. And I'm thinking that's absurd. So I don't know who these experts are. My guess is, I want Pianki and Jean's opinion on this. Anybody else wants to call in too? 215-383-3832. I don't say the number a lot because it's right there in front of you. You know, when you pull up the episode, there it is, call in number. So, you know, it's right there. But the idea that this isn't, you know, allowed because it's not in a specific constitutional provision, I think goes to, and this is, I think, where Johnson would back us up, that lawyers and judges, they don't look to the Constitution. They look to cases and they look to precedent. And because there is no precedent, because this has never happened, therefore there is no case because this has never happened. Therefore, there is no constitutional remedy because this has never happened. That to me, again, is irrational because it is happening and has happened. It has happened and it is happening now. Therefore, we can use the Constitution by simply reading it to find the remedy to remove these jerks, these SOBs from office that they have usurped and get them the hell out of there. Pianki, does my logic make sense to you? Oh,
well, that's going to require Congress to do that.
That wasn't a question. I wasn't solving the question of, you know, who's going to do it. Well, I wasn't solving about, you know, will they do it? That's a whole other question.
They have to
I'm
recognize
they can. That, go ahead.
Yeah, they would have to recognize that that's the fact.
Well, I just told them. Let's share my show. Doesn't Congress listen to my show?
Yeah, well,
I mean, we're giving all this good information. See, that's the problem. You know, Pianki, this frustrates me. You know, I go through all this stuff here. I mean, we should be broadcasting the halls of Congress right now. Action Radio is your solution. We're right here. What's the problem?
Well,
sorry, I'm having too much
fun. You know, there's nothing wrong with speaking what you see or perceive to be. Okay, now let's put that out there. Now, how do you solve the problem? The courts can't solve. The courts can't tell Biden to go sit down.
Yes, they can.
That would happen to Congress.
No. There is a state challenge. There is a state challenge from Texas that's still out there challenging the fact that Texas voters had their vote disenfranchised by all the illegal votes across the country and all the other states. That is in the Supreme Court now. They haven't, they've said it, you know, they haven't taken the case, but they've refused the case, but they can certainly, you know, take it up. That's right there. Let me get into this this article here that I found. This here's a great source for you guys. It's on my Facebook page. I don't know if I put it on the Action Radio group, but you know, just you get the podcast. Look at Constitution Annotated. Okay, constitution.congress.gov. So this is right from Congress. All right, it's called Constitution Annotated. And this is Article 2, Section 4. The president, and this is what I just read, so I'm going to read it again. The president, vice president, and all civil officers of the United States shall be removed from office on impeachment for and conviction of treason, bribery, or other high crimes and misdemeanors. And this is what Congress says about this provision. So this is why I know Congress can do it, because Congress wrote this. It says the Constitution gives Congress the authority to impeach and remove the president, vice president, and all federal, quote, civil officers for treason, bribery, or other high crimes and misdemeanors. And I would argue that Biden's guilty of all three. Okay. They say this tool was inherited from English practice in which Parliament impeached and convicted ministers and favorites of the crown, that'd be Obama's people, you know, in a struggle to rein in the crown's power. Congress's power of impeachment is an important check on the executive and judicial branches, recognized by the framers as a crucial tool for holding government officers accountable, or in this case, non-government officers accountable, you know, for violations of law and abuses of power. Okay, violations of law and abuses of power. Can you think of any greater violation of law or abuse of power than what's happening right now? Stealing the election, overthrowing the legitimate government, and committing national suicide in the process. I think that qualifies. All right. It says Congress has most notably employed the impeachment tool against the president and federal judges, but all federal civil officers are subject to removal by impeachment. Let me say that again. All federal civil officers are subject to removal by impeachment. The practice of impeachment makes clear, however, that members of Congress are not civil officers subject to impeachment and removal. Yeah, because they're not bureaucrats. They're not civil officers. They're elected officials. Totally different. There's more on this, but I'll save it right now because it looks like we got Josie on the line. Let me bring her on and see what you think.
Good morning,
Josie. What are you having with your coffee?
Good morning.
Sorry.
I don't drink coffee at all.
Oh, okay.
No, I don't like coffee.
No Juan Valdez? No, Colombian mountain grown?
No.
I'm just kidding. Okay, fine.
No tea, no Juan Valdez.
No burro?
I wanted to say the United States obeys laws.
Right.
And this guy shouldn't even be impeached because he's not a legitimate president at all. He should be arrested. Forget the impeachment crap.
That's a really good question. I explored that earlier, and that, I agree with that. I've made that argument, too, that he's not the president. Therefore, you don't impeach him. You arrest him. But here's the thing, though.
Yeah.
He's holding the title. Here's the thing. He's sitting in the office, even though he's not allowed to be there. He's holding the title, even though it's not his. So, therefore, if he's holding the title of president, isn't he not liable and accountable for the options to remove the president? If he's holding that office,
he's going to be arrested.
Okay, but the thing is, I'm sort of changing my viewpoint. I'm modifying my viewpoint. You know, I agree that he's not president, so he should just be arrested. But on the other hand, he's liable and he's accountable for what he's doing, for taking the office, for sitting in the White House, for issuing executive orders, for acting as the president, therefore, for screwing up Afghanistan, for screwing up the border, for committing national suicide, for wanting to sign bills if he gets them that would bankrupt our country and everything else. So isn't he therefore accountable as president, even though he's not,
and
still subject to the same prosecutions?
I don't think he even know what he's doing because he's in another world. But it's just like the illegals. When they come in, they don't have nothing to lose. They just commit the crime. And this jerk, he's doing the same thing. He don't care, and everybody's excusing him because he has dementia. He doesn't even know what he's doing. Okay, he's being guided by a little string, by a puppet. The one running the show is Obama. Obama should be in prison together with George Soros, Nancy Pelosi, John Roberts from Supreme Court, and all these clonings. They should be arrested. And why should we waste our money, tax dollars, and impeachment? That's ridiculous. I don't even want to see that.
Well,
because
the Supreme
Court, if you impeach this clown, if you impeach this clown, they want to put Kamala Harris in there. Look, did you see how long did she take to quit her real job that she had because she didn't know if this was going to be good or not, the fraud that they were committing, you know? And finally, after what, weeks and weeks that she finally resigned from her job. You know, these people are crooks, criminal, a fraud, no good, all of them. And like I said before, it's coming. Donald Trump is coming back to claim the presidents that he won officially. And these people did not win. And Claire is wrong about this. I don't care if it's written in the Constitution. We make things right in America. We are Americans. And we don't steal a bank, like you said, rob a bank, and keep the money, and you buy all these things, and it's okay. We don't do that in America. Even if it's written or not, we know what's right. We know what's right in America, and this is wrong. And even Democrat people are starting to realize what the heck is going on. Some of the girls that I danced with Tumba say, I'm so disappointed. I don't even want to be a Democrat, one of my friends has been saying, you know, because they're ashamed of what's happening to this country. And the whole world knows it, too. And it's embarrassing. How come we allow to let it go on this far? But there is a reason why, and it's coming. So that's all I can say.
Yeah, and I can't wait to see that. The Arizona audit's coming up too, and you mentioned that earlier, so that was kind of cool. See, now I think I don't mind approaching this in multiple different ways. I think the argument is valid that he's not president, therefore he can't be impeached. We should go direct to arrest for treason, coup, and overthrowing a legitimate government. I believe that, and I wish that would happen. Okay. I also believe that because he is acting as president, he's subject to the liabilities and accountabilities of president, and that means impeachment. So I'm sort of modifying my view. I don't care which way they go. If they go after him for not being for usurping the office and just arrest him, or if they go after him for being accountable as president, even though he's not, and impeach him, and then, you know, and then try him in the Senate, and get him out that way. I don't really care. In fact, they could probably do both. Okay, and that'd be fine with me. But the whole idea, you know, that this is not constitutional, it never made sense to me yesterday. I just hadn't put all the arguments together.
And you know, that's very sad. What all the criminals, family members in Congress, criminals, because they're using these sick men to do their dirty job, just to be the front men. But really and truly, this man doesn't even know where he's standing from one minute to the next. He's supposed to be guided by somebody every time he's walking and every time he's talking. And I mean, this man is being used, but his own family, his own friends, his own Congress, his own Nancy Pelosi, Chuck Schumer, they're using this man because since he's sick, they know if anything happens, who cares? He's probably going to be dying soon anyway from so much sickness that he has.
Well, here's another one, too.
These people are so corrupt.
Yeah.
Corrupt to the core.
Did you hear he may owe $500,000 in back taxes?
No, I didn't hear
that. Just came out in the news last night. Let me start an article here that I'm going to get to. Jim's on the line, too, so we're going to get to him in just a bit. We've got it says here, the title of the article is A Ruling Class with Blood on Its Hands, and it's by J.B. Shirk. American Thinker, September 2nd. I'll just read the first little bit. It says, allow me to suggest three cheat codes for separating truth from propaganda in the age of mass media manipulation. One, whatever is censored is true. Two, refusal to audit elections is proof that vote totals are unverifiable and fraudulent. And three, any president who inexplicably disappears for days at a time and admits that he is, quote, not allowed to answer questions from the press is not actually president. I can get to that a little bit later, but that to me seems right on. Josie?
Well, yeah. I'm just disappointed in this whole thing. And the reason they brought the coronavirus and all that to distract people from this sickness so they can be doing the fraud with this man in the basement. You know, this whole thing was well organized. The coronavirus, the corona test, COVID test, they were made years ago. This is not nothing that they just created quickly. This has been planned, well organized from a long time ago. Because Fauci, the criminal Fauci midget, he created AIDS to wipe out half of the world, but it didn't work out that well. So they've been working on this for a long time, Greg.
I've talked about that for almost 2 years now. Yeah. No, in fact, I'm exploring this new organization. Hold on a second.
Can I tell you something quickly?
Yeah, go ahead. Then I want to finish for our discussion this hour. Yeah, go ahead.
One of the nurses from Sacred Heart from the COVID Union, she was telling us, me and my husband, that no more ivermectin for nobody in Sacred Heart Hospital.
Really?
We need to shut down the hospital. We need to protest with signs. We need to stand outside because they're killing people. They have a lady in the COVID Union that she came back after being vaccinated with blood clots in her kidney, and her kidneys are shutting down. And all her skin is peeling, just chunks are peeling. This nurse was telling them, taking care of her. These people are criminal, and they're getting away. And the mayor, whoever's going to do something, we need to do something about it because they're murdering our innocent people in these hospitals.
I'll tell you what, I've got a course of action already. First of all, let me hold you up because I've got to get this in before the top of the hour because I want to finish this discussion so people have a united hour. You're absolutely right, and we can talk about this in the third hour. I'm not trying to shut you down on this, but we have the third hour today, so we're going to go till 10 o'clock Central, 11 o'clock Eastern time. And so when Donnie calls in, I'll tell him too, he's welcome to stick around. But there's a protest every Friday between 5 and 7 at the Pensacola Sacred Heart Hospital. And they're protesting for, you know, medical freedom to not be fired because they don't take the vaccine. So that's going on every Friday. And I've been in one of them. I made a videotape of it. So you guys want to do that? That's
what
a place
time?
To go. You want to protest?
Did
between
5
and 7 every Friday across the street from Sacred Heart Hospital. That's 9th Avenue. It's across from the Cordova Mall. Easy to find. Go to my Facebook page. It's right there. I'll put it on the Action Radio group page too. But that's one thing. Now, the other thing you can do, I've already called, and I'm trying to get him on the show, Dr. Lepato, the new Surgeon General of Florida. And I'm telling their office, we want him to authorize hydroxychloroquine and ivermectin for COVID treatments in Florida. Okay?
Yeah.
So there's a way you can fight that. All right? So you want to do something really positive. I always believe in positive. Try to make people do something from the negative. All they do is resist. But if you do something, if you go to somebody who's already positive, that's Dr. Lepato. And I'm probably mispronouncing his name. I'll write it down and figure it out. But so call his office. Just look up Florida Surgeon General and go to Office of the Surgeon General. It's right there. And, you know, I'll give out the number at some point. Or actually, Gene can probably look it up. Gene, if you have a second, too, let's get that number out there so people can call directly. All right. The other provisions, the last two, and Jim, I know you're on the line. I will get to you in just a little bit here. The other two provisions I wanted to get to in the Constitution that allow for the impeachment, removal, criminal prosecution of Joe Biden are the very things that protect innocent people. Fourth Amendment and the Fifth Amendment. Okay, so the Fourth Amendment says the right of the people to be secure in their persons, houses, papers, and effects against unreasonable searches and seizures shall not be violated, and no warrant shall issue but upon probable cause supported by oath or affirmation, particularly describing the place to be searched and the persons or things to be seized. Okay, so the very things that protect innocent Americans allow for the prosecution of guilty ones. All right, the audits that have been authorized by the Arizona State Senate, that particular audit and the other audits that are coming up, that's the warrant. That's the probable cause. That's supported by oath or affirmation in all the hearings that they did where they put people under oath. Okay? So they are acting as a judiciary, which a Senate can do, just as the Senate, the Congressional Senate acts as a judiciary in the trial of a president. That is a judicial constitutional procedure that allows all this to go ahead. So the audits are the due process. Okay. The decertifying of the Biden electors is the due process. All right. So you want something in the Constitution, it's right there. Fifth Amendment. All right. We've got a couple minutes left here. I'll get to Jim. No person shall be held to answer for a capital, and here's the other key phrase, or otherwise infamous crime. Now the capital crime, of course, is the murder of Ashley Babbitt by Lieutenant Michael J. Byrd. That is a capital crime. So their murder was committed. Now, was that an intentional part of the Biden insurrection? I don't think so. I think you have a rogue officer here. That is a capital crime. But the coup, the seizure of the presidency was not done by murder. Okay? They didn't kill Donald Trump to seize the presidency. All right? So that's not a capital crime.
They tried before.
Yeah.
Donald Trump on January.
Well, we need to talk about that. We need to talk about. I want to make this clear to the FBI and the NSA who's listening. We're not advocating this. Okay. What we're saying is we want to describe an action that happened. And I believe there have been attempts on his life. I just don't know about them yet. So let's get that. We'll talk about that another time. But here's the thing. Here's the key phrase though. To answer for a capital or otherwise infamous crime. Can you think of an otherwise infamous crime more infamous than an overthrow of the legitimate government, seizure of the White House, and the national suicide program they put us on? That's the most infamous crime I think has ever happened in this country. Josie?
Yeah.
Okay.
Definitely. You're absolutely right, Greg. Absolutely.
Well, thank you. I love hearing that. It's so much fun. Now, it gets even better. Fifth Amendment goes on, all right? It says, no person can be held an infamous crime unless on a presentment or indictment of a grand jury. Now, here's what gets interesting, too. Except in cases arising in the land or naval forces or in the militia when an actual service in time of war or public danger. Can you think of a time of greater public danger than what this insurrection has put us in? We don't even need a grand jury. The Fifth Amendment says very clearly, except in cases arising in land or naval forces or in the militia, when in the actual service in time of war or public danger. And the second part is, we call the president the commander-in-chief. Has the president not been called into actual service as commander-in-chief, even though that's not justified? We'll talk about that another time. But can we say that we don't need a grand jury because he's acting as commander-in-chief? Look what happened in Afghanistan. So for these two ways, what do I mean a grand jury? Except in cases arising from, you know, as I said, and subject for the, you know, I said, there we go, actual in times of public danger. We are in a time of public danger. So the Fifth Amendment applies. we can go after this guy directly.
They,
what do you think, Josie?
These people are breaking our amendments completely. They're mm-hmm. taking our freedom of speech. They're taking our right to say no to inject poison in our bodies.
Yep.
These people are breaking the law completely, completely. So to me, no impeachment. They should put him in prison. I want to see Biden and the rest of the gang in Gitmo. And I think we're preparing it, actually.
See, I think both. I think we should go after impeachment by what I just read in the Fourth and Fifth Amendments and the Article 4, 2, Section 4. What's that?
Okay. We have about 800 top-secret military working with Donald Trump. And it's coming. You will see.
Okay. I want evidence.
That's why I didn't call.
Get me evidence.
Yeah.
I'm gonna play journalist here.
It's coming. It's coming.
Okay. All right.
Yeah,
let's move on
coming.
To Jim. Hold on, everybody.
Well,
here we go.
Hold on.
All right.
Hold on.
Out of the forests of Virginia to the... What? I started my theme.
I got the phone number. I was going to use the bell.
Okay,
but...
let me play my theme. We'll get Jim on. Then we'll give the phone number. Hold on a second here. All right, here we go. Out of the forests of Virginia to the swamps of southern Florida comes a great man who carries a big gun, probably a Desert Eagle, 50 caliber. He served our nation in the military. He protected the citizenry in law enforcement. And now he is a director of Florida Carry, trying to make the Second Amendment, as written, a reality for all Americans. He is Jim Dice with the Second Amendment Report for Action Radio. This is an exciting place to be, Jim. I know you've been listening for a while. Welcome. All right. Let's get
you
the phone
number. You have the number?
So.
Does she have the number?
She does. Go for it, Jean.
Okay. Yes, it's the Florida... phone number for the health department is
850-245-4444. Okay, thank you. And I'm going to hang up and I'll listen to Jim and you guys. God bless.
God bless you, too. I can add the number here, too, 850-245-4210. I think that's directly to the Office of the Surgeon General. You might want to check that one, Gene. 245. If you go to the Surgeon General's office, I mean, I just pulled this up. I remembered that I called him. I just looked it up. 245-4210, I think it will get you there also.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay.
I'll call you
we'll publish
later.
Those.
Bye.
We'll put those online. Thanks, Gene. Josie, Tony J's. Jim, another J. What is this, J Friday? Gene, Josie, and Jim.
It must be.
It's alliteration. All right, sir. Do you want to wade in with anything you've heard so far? Yeah, because I know you love these constitutional arguments. But we can get right to gun talk.
I'll go into gun talk because we got all kinds of stuff this week.
Let's do it.
And I even have a firearm of the week for you.
So oh, make my day. That. Go ahead. Make my day. I'll work on my
clothes.
All right,
so I guess we'll start off with that. So
okay.
The firearm of the week is the... new, soon-to-be fielded MK-22, which is in a civilian version. It's the Barrett MRAD. MRAD is a multi-something adaptive design, multi-role adaptive design. There we go.
We can look it up. We can find it. The Gene's the best about finding stuff.
It's multi-role. Yeah. Adaptive design. Okay. So it's going to be the new precision sniper rifle.
Ooh.
For the Army, the Marines, and Special Operations Command. So it has been undergoing testing with soldiers from the 82nd Airborne Division and I think RSOC. I know it's a Special Operations
RSOC,
Army Special Operations Command.
Hey, I got it. I got my acronym.
You got
okay,
it.
Okay, I'm happy.
and I'm not certain if they were RSOC guys. I know there were Special Operations guys involved in the testing and also some snipers from the 82nd Airborne Division.
Have you tried one?
We're testing it out. I have not, no. Okay. So it's an interesting rifle, and it's going to replace all of the Army and Special Operations sniper rifles. I assume that's with the exception of the Tier 1 guys who can choose whatever weapons they want. and it's going to replace all of the Marines' bolt-action rifles.
Is this semi-auto by chance?
It is a bolt-action.
Bolt-action, okay.
But it has a 10-round magazine. One of the interesting things about it is it has changeable barrels on it. So it'll be able to fire either the new 7.61 millimeter, which is the new rifle cartridge, one of the new rifle cartridges that the military is going to, or a 300 Norma Magnum or a 338 Norma Magnum. So you'll be able to fire any of those three cartridges. The barrel, from what I understand, can be switched out by the individual sniper using a torque wrench, and he has a couple of bolts that he takes out to take the barrel out.
That includes the chamber, so you're instantly switching calibers. Is that the idea?
Yeah. So the chamber is there with the barrel. I am assuming that when they do this, they have to replace the bolt as well, because the bolt face is not going to match. But the headspace is done as you switch the barrel out to give it the correct headspace for the different rounds. It also has an adjustable match grade trigger, so the individual sniper can adjust the length of pull and the weight that's required to break the shot off to whatever is most comfortable for them. I think, and I don't know this for sure because they haven't made the final decisions, I think it will have a 26-inch barrel because that's what the MRAD civilian versions in the 300 Norma and 338 Normas have. So I'm assuming that they will continue with that. It will come with a removable suppressor, is sub-MOA, even without match grade ammunition at 1,000 meters, which is really nice. With match grade ammunition, it's 0.5 MOA at 1,500 meters.
Oh, my. We're going to need to translate all this for people because Gene's like, what is this guy talking about?
So if you want a quick and easy kind of back-of-the-envelope way to think of MOA, MOA is minutes of angle, and it's how accurate a barrel is inherently. So any barrel inherently is going to have some variation in where rounds will strike, even if it's held perfectly stationary when it's fired. And the back of the envelope way to think of MOAs is one MOA is approximately 1 inch at 100 yards.
Yeah. Think of a circle, folks. Think of degrees in a circle. All right. So the world is divided up. And if you know navigation, the world's divided up into degrees, minutes, and seconds. Okay. So a minute of angle is, if you have 360 degrees, 1/60th of a degree is a minute. All right. If you go from a fixed point and you start expanding out, that minute of angle is nothing at the point of origin, but it's an inch at 100 yards. You know, and it goes out and out and out for however many miles you go to the diameter of the earth. Now you're, I forgot how many miles it is, but it's a lot. Well, actually, it's, a minute of angle is actually in latitude, a minute is a nautical mile. Okay. So there's something interesting to do too. So that if you're looking at navigation in terms of that, a minute of latitude, and they use latitude because it's consistent, they're parallels. So degrees, minutes, and seconds, 1/60th of a degree is a minute, and that's a nautical mile, and that's a way to think of it, okay? So, but if you expand it in terms of a cone, if you start an origin point, and you expand out, and you draw a circle with 360 degrees, and you divide those 360 degrees, if you divide a degree into 60 parts, that's a minute, and you divide each minute into 60 parts, that's a second. So we're talking about inches or less. That's why our munitions that use GPS are so precise, because they do that. They divide in degrees, minutes, and seconds for the military. And I think it's probably like degrees and minutes for civilian, because it's not as accurate on purpose. Anyway, so that's how it works. So if you can imagine an expanding cone, a very long ice cream cone, expanding out far enough, it's an inch at 100 yards. It's 2 inches at 200 yards. So I think it's like, what would that be, 10 inches at 1,000 yards? Have I got that about right, Jim?
Right.
For a minute of angle?
Yeah.
So it's an ever expanding. The further out you go, the bigger the cone is. But if you can hit something within 10 inches at 1,000 yards, you're just as accurate as 1 inch at 100 yards. But the ability to hit anything at 1,000 yards, trust me, I've tried it. That's an accomplishment in and of itself. Because the further out you go, the more other things play. You know, in the flight time, I don't know what the flight time is. It's fractions of a second for a bullet from a rifle barrel to 100 yards. But it's a second and a half at 1,000 yards for the ammo that I was using, okay? A lot can happen in a second and a half. 1,000, you know. It doesn't sound like a lot of time. But you have a 20-knot wind, divide 20 by a second and a half, and you're going to get a whole bunch of feet, like 50, something like that. You know, so that bullet moves 50 feet. You know, in the time it takes to go 1,000 yards, if you get a strong enough wind. With me so far, Jim? Make sense?
Yep.
Okay, good.
I agree with you 100%. And I would add that the amount of effect that the wind is going to have is going to be dependent upon the bullet that you're firing as well. So it's going to affect lighter bullets and larger bullets with more surface area more than heavier, smaller.
Yeah. And it's lighter bullets travel faster because they're generally lighter, but they also slow down faster because they don't have the mass to carry them. All this stuff plays in. I mean, ballistics, I was fascinated by ballistics. I did a ton of research. I even looked at the Dr. Fackler's, you know, wound ballistics. So we can get into that someday too. It's fascinating and grotesque all at the same time. But it's the study of ballistics is fascinating to me because you've got a projectile. You know, guided missile is guided. So if you goof on the launch, you can at least guide it the rest of the way, cruise missiles, things like that. With a bullet, once it's gone, whatever input you put at that launch point, it's on its own. It's the forces of nature and physics take over after that. And this is why it's such a – you want to put so much precision at the firing point so that downrange you get what you want to get. And things like the bolt, if you ever see the old movies or like the World War One, where it takes 4 steps for bolt. You got to lift it up, you got to pull it back, ejecting your cartridge or just opening the bolt. You got to push it forward, loading the next round and putting it down to lock it. So you have 4 actions with the bolt. Okay. Now the bolt is really good. Mauser, I think, was the inventor of the bolt, right? So Mauser, German engineer, comes up with this incredible bolt that's so much stronger than the old single shot and trapdoors and all the things before it. And it allowed for a magazine so you could do 5 rounds. And of course, the British did 10 rounds in their rifle, making it a superior combat rifle, in my opinion, to most World War One rifles. And so it's interesting how this works, but the bolt actually locks it in. And if you lock it in, it's launching from a very secure place as opposed to semi-auto that's held by a spring. Okay, so semi-autos are very accurate, but I don't think they'll ever be as accurate as bolt actions because bolts lock and springs don't. Otherwise, it wouldn't automatically reload the next round. So it always goes into it, and then you got your scopes and everything else. So the idea of a sniper rifle is fascinating. And of course, the nasty question, Jim, is the current insurrection going to give this to the Taliban? You know, are we going to keep it for a while? I mean, can we keep our rifle this time?
Well, hopefully we're going to keep this for a while. Since it hasn't been fielded yet, I'm assuming that it will just be ours until someone takes one from a sniper.
Yeah, well, that can happen too. That's nasty stuff happens.
Although I will say that Barrett actually does sell the MRAD to other militaries, although none of them that are adversaries of ours, but... As far as I know, Barrett is currently selling the MRAD to the Israelis, the Norwegians, and I think also to New Zealand.
Okay. Yeah, for those of us like me who are 308 or a 30-06 is plenty of round. It's a medium caliber, right? Or I guess it's a major caliber, but it's not as strong as these Magnum rifles. You know, people think that it's more powerful, therefore it's better to shoot. Trust me, folks. You know, you fire 40 rounds of 308, I'm done. That's all I need, okay? You know, if I'm doing a competition or practice or something like that. But these Magnum rounds, you know, I mean, they kick your shoulder. What's the biggest round you fired, Jim? If you fired a 50 or you know, and did it have a recoil-absorbing semi-auto or did you have bolt-action 50, which I think would take, you know, most guys' shoulders off?
The only 50 numbers that I have fired are machine guns. Uh-huh. So
a machine gun?
That's different. So the largest rifle round I've fired is a 338 Lapua.
Yeah, how'd your shoulder feel? A little surprised or by the reaction or what?
It was not a happy time.
Yeah, Yeah. So these, and here's the thing too, if you're a civilian competitor, all right, and we're going to talk, we should talk to Chappie about this when he comes on too. It's like people think that the biggest, most powerful gun is going to be better for, you know, accuracy and all this kind of stuff. And guys, you know, they've been taking deer in this country with an old 30-30 lever action since the 1800s. It still works just as well as it did in the 1800s, and it's not going to take your shoulder off. So these 300 Magnums and 308 Normans and 338 Lapuas and all this fancy stuff, unless you're hunting elephant, which disgusts me anyway, but unless you're going after or Cape Buffalo or the other things that people hunt in Africa, unless you're doing something like that, which is the only humane way to kill an animal that big, you don't need as big a gun as most people think they need. You know, so a 308 can do 1,000 yards, although it's not as good as I thought my 30-06, because I think it had a little bit more oomph to it, but not if it's going to hurt my shoulder. And my 30-06 was great. It was a Savage 110. I've got a 308, the same thing now. Big, heavy barrel. You know, it's got one of these ultimate sniper stocks on it, and, you know, I just got to put another Shepherd scope on it, and away we go. But, yeah, you know, don't beat yourself up when you're competing. You're not going to have fun. And don't get a what's that handgun, the one that is made up in the Dakotas? You know what I'm thinking of? Freedom Arms.
Oh.
Kasul. 454 yeah, Kasul. Yeah, don't fire that.
Oh, yeah.
It's going to break your hand. All right. Anyway, so that's just my soapbox for today. Comments, Jim? Make sense?
No, I agree.
Okay. Well, we got to disagree. We got to do that. Otherwise, it's not a Friday.
All right. So
what can we disagree on?
On to the next topic of the day.
Okay.
All right. So... I hate being right in certain instances.
Oh, no.
And so here's a case where I was right and predicted that this would happen. So back earlier this summer, we discussed a case called Hirschfeld versus Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, and Firearms. And this was a person under the age of 21 who... filed a lawsuit against Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, and Firearms regarding the ban on the sale of firearms to young adults under 21, saying that it was unconstitutional.
Mm-hmm.
And I predicted in July that the courts, the DCA, in this case it's the 4th DCA out of Richmond, would delay ruling on it until such time as the plaintiff was mooted out of the case by turning 21. And so as predicted, the plaintiff turned 21, and this week a three-judge panel from the 4th DCA ruled that the case is now moot. And so they reversed
Cowards.
The lower court ruling and remanded it back to the lower court to dismiss.
Isn't that special? See, this is why we have a judiciary, people that care about the Constitution. They care about their rights. They want to find the right solution to give redress to the grievance of not being able to purchase a gun. Is this handgun, long gun, both, neither? Which one?
I believe this must have been a handgun because this was a federal case that was filed, so I think it was regarding a handgun, but I'm not certain.
So all you 19-year-old single mothers out there, I want you to take note that the government doesn't care about you. If you have to defend your kids from a home invasion or a stalking ex, you're on your own. You can't get a gun because the government says they're going to wait until the case is moot so that the plaintiff has no standing. That's how much they care about you. I just want you to know. This is why these things are so disgusting. So they're covering their ass here. This thing. And we have the same thing in Florida, right? We've got a case here. In fact, I got Chappie on the line too, so I'm going to bring him on in a second as well, or just let him listen in for a bit to get the fun stuff we talk about here. But Florida, same thing. We got a constitutional amendment that actually raised the age to 21 for all gun purchases. What the hell's wrong with these people?
Actually, it was not a constitutional amendment. It was actually done through the Stoneman-Douglas Act.
Okay. But isn't there a constitutional provision? I thought there was, because I know they added things onto it.
So the prohibition on handguns is a federal prohibition.
Okay.
And the Stoneman-Douglas Act added long guns to that prohibition in Florida.
See, here's the thing I disagree with too, is the idea that, you know, that one person, you know, they have to have a plaintiff suffering, you know, and then they can just wait until they're 21, because the class action really is everybody who's between 18 and the day before their 21st birthday. I mean, that's your class action. That's your group that's being affected as people age into it, where they should have a right, but they can't, you know, and then if they wait that time, then they're okay. That is criminally negligent on the part of the courts to allow that kind of thing to happen. And the lawyers are not saying, well, we're going to make a big class action. You know, all 18, 19 and 20 year olds until their 21st birthday are the plaintiffs. That's how I'd handle it if you could. I don't know if you can, though.
Yeah, I guess the problem would be at the time that you do it, you name everyone who's 18 to 21 as plaintiffs, but in 3 years, all those people are mooted out anyway. I think what they should do mm-hmm. is they should either allow the plaintiff in these cases, if they age out, they should allow another plaintiff to be substituted who is a similar situation. Or they should decide that because it's implicating a basic fundamental right and because it affects numerous people, that they should decide the case even though that particular plaintiff has been mooted out.
Yeah. Another question to the idea
so
of standing.
Just so that there is case law on point, because it's interesting also to note that the three-judge panel that mooted it, one of the judges, who was the Obama appointee on the panel,
of course,
wrote a long concurring opinion expressly pointing out that because this case had been mooted and is now dismissed, the original verdict by the judge had absolutely no precedent value and was nothing more binding than an editorial opinion in a newspaper would be.
That's a nice dismissal. How convenient. Yeah. So again, judges make things up as they go. They use bogus principles like standing, which really doesn't exist. The idea that you have to prove your case before you can prove your case is insane. You know, it's a way to keep people from even getting to court in the first place, like this. So it's a perfect example. I'm going to bring on Chappie. And so Donnie Chappie Chapman is our newest reporter here at Action Radio. Starts at 8:30 Central Time, 9:30 Eastern Time on Fridays. And again, Chappie, I didn't get a chance to message you, but we're going to go till 10 o'clock. So we've got an extra, or 11 o'clock in your case, if you're Eastern Time. So feel free to hang around. And there's no rush to chat, you know, but and Jim, of course, too. You guys can change your hours around, because we're going to be going 6 to 9 Central, 7 to 10 Eastern, starting next week. So if you want to flip your times around a little bit, fine with me. Chappie, you want in on this this case that Jim's brought up?
I just think it's kind of wrong, though. You got to wait till 21 to own a firearm. You know, you can go ahead and vote, you can serve, but wait until 21. I mean, what's next? They're just going to keep pushing it and pushing it and pushing it. So,
well, the gun age goes up, but the voting age goes down. They want 16 years old, the Democrats do. You know, they want to be able to vote in high school. It's a fascinating thing that what rights they want. They want felons, ex-felons, to be able to vote, but not have the Second Amendment rights back, even though they've served their time.
Yeah.
And, I think Jim and I disagree with that a little bit, too. Okay.
And I don't see an age on the Second Amendment. It doesn't say at the age of such and such you're allowed to bear arms. So.
Ooh, that's a great question, because we had Civil War soldiers that were fighting at, what, 14, 15 years old?
14 years old,
Yeah. Jim? What do you think?
No, I agree. Should
there be a Second Amendment age at all?
The other thing that I think is interesting is, you know, you have the Second Amendment definitely being treated as a second-class right, because I guarantee you, were a state to implement a ban on abortions for women mm-hmm. aged 18 to 21, the courts would fast-track that through so that they could get a decision before the plaintiffs were mooted out.
Interesting. Yeah. It's fascinating how these rights work, and you know, and I think we should explore that question more of, should there be an age on the Second Amendment? Because, and I've used this example before, glider pilots, you can solo a glider at 14. Okay. You can solo a powered airplane at 18. I know because I did it. I mean, 16, excuse me. I know because I did it. A week after my 16th birthday, I'm floating around, you know, Nashua, New Hampshire, and on the, in the snowy, somewhat snowy skies with my poor instructor freezing on the ground. And I'm up there by myself a week after my 16th birthday. So why is it that I'm able to operate? You know, granted, I was under supervision, but I think 16-year-olds should be under supervision with a gun anyway. But the thing is that, you know, we've got this provision where it's okay to fly an airplane at 16, but wait till 21 to shoot a gun? Or, well, it's not shoot, but to own one, you know. Well, it's not an exact comparison, but the other thing I was going to say was I would fly cross countries around New England. I'd fly interstate as a 16-year-old in a Cessna 150 around New England. And yet, you know, to not be able to own a gun at 16, that doesn't make sense to me.
Well, you know, and a lot of kids move out of the house at 18 and go off to college and live in an apartment. So
yeah,
I guess it's you have to wait to defend yourself at 21. So I guess, you know, a criminal won't break into your house unless you're 21. So
or campus carry, Anthony Sabatini. Go ahead, Jim.
Well, Greg, before you go too far down that hole, there's nothing illegal about a 16-year-old owning a firearm.
Okay.
Now, it's illegal for them to purchase the firearm.
Oh, that's interesting. So they can be given one?
Yes. I gave my son his first rifle when he was, I think, 12. So he can own one, but he can't go purchase one from a federal firearms licensee.
Okay. Huh. So all those 19-year-old single moms that want to protect your kids? You know, that's a way to do it. Interesting. Okay.
Yeah, the challenge is if you who has, you know, a child from an abusive father, and let's say your parents have both died, then it's going to be much more challenging for you to get someone to buy you a firearm and give it to you.
Yeah.
Yeah. Then you're starting to run into the lines of the straw purchase and all the other stuff. So.
Well, the correct answer is just to fix the laws.
As long as they're legal.
Yeah. As long as it's a gift and it's legal, it's not. So one more thing I want to get to, Greg, before I have to jump off, because I do have to jump off at 9:30. But I think this is a good one, especially with Chappie being on with his background, is the Democrats slipped into the defense spending bill that is going through Congress right now a red flag law to apply to the military.
Those SOBs.
So they basically took the red flag laws that are in place in a handful of states, including Florida, mirrored those and stuck them in the defense spending bill, hoping to get that through.
Mm-hmm. Has it?
So.
Did it?
It has not yet because the defense spending bill is still going through committees, but they were very, very quiet about it, and people are just starting to realize that it exists there. So hopefully there will be some Republicans who will voice their concerns and a couple of Democrat senators who will voice their concerns and get it taken out. But I'm not sure. I mean, if you remember, one of our Republican senators from Florida, Rick Scott, signed the red flag law in Florida. So the odds of him taking it out are probably very low.
Oh, Rick Scott was disgusting. I mean, didn't he sign the Stoneman Douglas alleged school safety act, which was partly good.
Where our red flag law came from.
Yeah. No, that's the idea that you could, it's prior restraint. Okay. It's arresting you. It's taking your property without due process for what they think you might do in the future. Maybe. Okay. That's not a judicial standard. That's not a legal standard. And yet it's being done. So red flag laws disgust me. On the other hand, you know, Jim, put your law enforcement hat on for a second here. There has to be a way when somebody is so obvious, so known, so, you know, presenting such a danger, they're displaying on Facebook, you know, murderous, horrendous things, and people, you know this person to be a problem, that you should be able to generate the probable cause to have an individual investigated. So how do we separate red flag blanket laws from being able to do something when people have a reasonably, you know, a good belief that this person is going to be a problem, and they want it solved beforehand just in case? Where do we find that line?
So we've had that with the Baker Act before. So if you thought someone was mentally ill, you could take them in and have them evaluated. And if they were found to be a danger to themselves or others, then they could be committed against their will and lose their right to possess firearms. And you have the case where you could actually investigate and charge them. And I'm okay with going in and having a judge temporarily suspend someone's rights under the Second Amendment if they have due process.
Yeah, so that's exactly what I was going to say.
If you're going to do that to me, and you think that, that I've done something that would mean that I shouldn't possess firearms other than committing a crime and being convicted, then let's have a trial. Let's go before a judge. Let me be present to defend my rights, and then let the judge decide.
And I feel that the fact that they confiscate weapons, you know, under red flag of what you, they think you might do, maybe, I mean, you know, a disgruntled spouse could accuse you, an ex could accuse you, a neighbor who hates you could accuse you, you know, and that's not due process. But I agree with you absolutely that due process, you know, allows for due process, so that you can actually do the things you can restrict once you follow the correct process. But the blanket ones, no, this idea that it can be done ahead of time is blatantly unconstitutional. Just like asset forfeiture, when they used to take things and you had to prove that your stuff wasn't involved in a crime to get it back. That's wrong. All asset forfeiture should be done after conviction, because now you've had your due process, and then they can take your stuff. Anyway, Chappie, you have opinion on this? Because I know Jim's going to have to go, if not in the next 30 seconds, pretty soon.
Nope. That's about it. I totally agree. So yeah.
Okay. Well, that was easy.
Yeah.
Jim, this is a great hour. This will be fun.
How much we agree on these things, isn't it?
we got an Air Force guy, we got an Army guy, and we got me who supports the Second Amendment. You know, absolutely. So you're not going to get a lot of disagreement. We need a good liberal to call. Come on, I dare you. Anybody, go ahead. 215-383-3832. There we go. Give us a call sometime.
Or maybe I need to go in and start doing a little more searching and find some of those areas that are at the margin where you and I can disagree, Greg, because every once in a while we do.
We haven't had a good disagreement. Yeah. Well, and the funny thing is, the more we disagree, the more I kind of, you know, come to your position. So it's really, I have modified my positions because of your logic, intellect, incisiveness, and all that other good stuff. So take that as a compliment.
That is scary. When I am in the voice of reason and intellect, we're in a bad place, Greg.
Not necessarily, but yeah, I know what you mean. I think the same thing too. So wait a minute, I just said something that made sense, and you kind of listen to yourself, you know, after. So how did I do that? You know, it's just, but it's practice. We get better at it. All right, sir. Do you have to leave, or you got a couple more minutes?
I do have to run off. So thank you so much. Once again, Jim Dykes with Florida Carry. You can find us at floridacarry.org.
Sounds good. Thank you, sir. Always a pleasure.
Thank you.
All right, we'll do it again. Yeah, it's this really becomes a family, Chappie. You know, we're all friends. You know, everybody on this show. It's incredible. It's not like a business per se. Even though, you know, we're going to be a huge business one day, and it's getting bigger all the time. We've had some amazing things happen the last little while with some of our guests, and I think you've brought in, you know, a whole bunch of folks as well to the show, which congratulations, thank you, I appreciate it. But it's the logic, the goals that we have here, the ability to write citizen legislation that's never been done, certainly not on a radio show, to combine the public forum with the public legislation and be able to take that directly to, you know, members of Congress, the state legislatures, the city councils, the county commissions, the school boards, you know, every place that normally was an isolated little bubble dictating to us. We're reversing that entire process here. And I believe this is, you know, a nice, quiet, peaceful revolution. You know, very orderly, very calm, but a revolution nonetheless. And so I'm glad to have you here as part of our family, part of our revolution.
Well, thanks for having me.
Oh, yeah. I'm on a roll today. I got compliments coming out everywhere. You know, and Jean, you're pretty good too. Because I compliment Jean all the time anyway, because she's amazing. All right, so let's go. I don't have a theme for you yet, but I will. And so do you like to tell Gun Tech for your report, or do you have another
Let's do this week in competition shooting, what's going on this weekend.
Okay.
There's actually a few within the area. Tomorrow, actually, Team Chappie Tactical will be shooting the Precision Rifle Match that's being held at Escambia River Gun Club. It starts at 8 o'clock if anybody would like to come out and check it out.
That's central time for you around the country. If you're
flying. Central time for us. So it's It's an affiliated American Rimfire Association match. So all your scores will go up to the American Rimfire Association, and you'll get your ranking within the state of Florida as well. So.
Ooh. Awesome. We're, when I start competing again, I'm going to get a Florida ranking. Hey, Gene, I'm going to get a Florida ranking. This is going to be cool. You should explain Rimfire. Let's talk about the difference. This would be a good time to explain the difference between Rimfire and Centerfire, because, you know, those of us that have done the gun thing for a while, and you've done it for a long time, you know, it's so easy to fall into the jargon. This is why I asked Jim to explain the acronyms, you know, that we use for different things, and because people have no idea. We went over the sniper rifle in detail. If you get a chance to listen to the first 15 minutes, I think before you got on, we're talking about this new MRAD something or other, and playing with acronyms, but we sort of went over the technology of a precision bolt action rifle, you know, because people don't know, and so we like to do that. So Rimfire, Centerfire.
Yes.
What's going
on? So it's basically where the location of the primer is. So Centerfire, kind of self-explanatory, the primer is in the center of the casing, versus Rimfire, the rim is your actual primer that causes, so both of those, the primer and the rim of the primer, is what causes the explosion, which then ignites the powder, causes compression, and then the bullet flies out. So
yeah,
that's the big difference. Of course, cost-wise, too, Rimfire is a lot cheaper. Well, was a lot cheaper. Let me put that previous to the pandemic here.
So why would a virus cause a rise in the price of ammo? Connect the dots.
So, yeah, so this, especially because I've gotten a lot more customers as soon as the pandemic. A lot of people, I think, are fear. You know, fear. Uh-huh. It's fear-driven. And I think right now a lot, because there's actually been a lot more. People are starting to see that, you know what, the government isn't as friendly as they thought they would be. And especially even people on the left are starting to realize, like, you know what, the left is lying to us. So I can't expect them to protect me. I need to protect myself. And then, of course, you have all of us who are pro-gun owners, and yeah, we're, you know, we need to defend ourselves, because everybody wants to, on the left, wants to defund the police. So if there's less people to protect us, we need to protect ourselves and protect each other. So that's where the rise came. So if you figure all the new gun owners, they probably bought ammo.
Mm-hmm.
And then all us previous gun owners wanted to stock up on ammo. And then us competition shooters are going to need ammo to compete. So that just caused a big whirlwind of ammo to not be available.
You know, but at least they can make more. You know, I mean, the brass,
yeah,
is available, lead's available, you know, copper jacketing's available, primers are available, at least I hope, right? No?
Well, with that, though, now components become the issue. So primers are the big crux. So when I have three different federal firearms license. I have my FFL-07, which is as a manufacturer, so I can manufacture firearms and sell them. And then I have a Class 2 special occupational tax. So I can manufacture and sell suppressors and short barrels. And then I have my FFL-08, and that is I'm able to import firearms, ammunition, and components. And the reason why I did that, because primers are pretty much impossible to get in the States. So all of us small ammo manufacturers were having to import our primers in. Well, of course, it goes through this hand, and then the cost would just rise up. So I was like, yeah, I'm not going to, you know, I'm going to cut out the middleman. I'm going to get my import license. And of course, I'm glad I, you know, did that during the Trump administration. And so now
Is it impossible now under the Biden insurrection or what?
Yeah, it's kind of, you know, just stacking up, being slid to the side. And if there's not a reason. And, yeah.
How fast they act. Is that ATF change? Because I know Eric Chipman, I think, or David,
yeah,
Chipman, or whatever his name was. Yeah.
Yeah. He's not in there anymore, I think.
He's not there. So. But, I mean, there are people like him.
There's people like him, yeah. And plus, they're just so – they are backlogged at the ATF because they were, for the longest time, not working in the office, in which some of them are still working from home. So, which that actually kind of did help people who – had their tax stamp waiting for suppressors, because then those guys were bored at home. They're like, okay, let me just file this. But so primer, so I was like, you know what, I'm going to break out the middleman. And then I actually have kind of boots on the ground in Europe that's sourcing stuff for me.
Okay.
So, but then I'm kind of at the mercy also of the European government. For instance, I've had for the longest time a bunch of stuff ready to ship out from Italy. But you know how bad COVID hit there, and the Italians only work till noon anyway, because you know they take a big. So
have you ever been to Italy? It's a wonderful country, but yeah, you're absolutely
right.
That was
actually my first duty station. I was stationed there for two years. So yeah,
it's Ramatelli, the oil field with the Tuskegee Airmen, or what?
That was actually at Aviano. So,
Aviano, okay. Oh, that's the big one now, right? Okay.
Yeah, the big one, yeah. Up northern, right base of the mountains. But okay. So I have boots on the ground. So we're, you know, of course, they're going in there every day because they're kind of making – I'm also working with an Italian firearm company because they need a U.S. importer. So I was kind of like, okay, that's fine, but you guys need to source me primers and all this other stuff. So they were able to do that, but now we're at the mercy of the Italian government, and they just – it's moving along the stack. It's just moving. So –
okay.
I actually had a Zoom meeting this past week with all my European distributors, and we're going to route it through a different country next order, and it's going to
okay.
come this way. So,
here's the big question, though. Why don't we make primers in this country?
So, funny thing you mentioned that. So, actually,
sometimes
my European distributors were like, we're getting your U.S.-made ammunition and primers and stuff here daily.
Oh.
I think everybody sure. can kind of put who the big ammo manufacturers are. There's an umbrella, you know, there's
we
a big company.
We can say them by name, Winchester, Remington, you
Vista
know,
Vista Outdoors,
else?
Who owns everybody, who has the big conglomerate of them.
Well, what's that? No, go ahead.
Vista Outdoors owns, everybody
Vista
thinks
Outdoors?
Like, oh, you know, I'm not going to buy Federal, I'm going to buy Winchester or this. Well, Vista Outdoors owns all of them.
How do you spell that?
Vista Outdoors. Yep, Vista Outdoors. So, and now
and who owns,
they bought
okay.
Remington.
Oh.
So all those companies are owned under one company now. Well, you know, and the president months ago, like, oh, no, we're making stuff. We're doing stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Well, none of us gun companies were getting anything. And when the stuff that we did get during the beginning of this whole thing was old stock number, not stock numbers, but lot numbers, old lot mm-hmm. numbers, you know, and then all of a sudden we can't get anything, but overseas is getting everything. So, and this is just Donnie Chapman speaking conspiracy wise. I personally think like the government's paying them not to sell to U.S. distributors, kind of like the government pays farmers not to.
Oh, wait a minute. Oh, no, this is an investigation we have to pursue. This is what we do here at Action Radio. Now you got my interest. Okay. Gene, while you're there, let's do an internet search on how would we phrase this? Government restriction. So they're restricting ammo to Americans, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, are there restrictions on, Gene, if you can look this up, now I'm curious, of government restrictions or incentives to not produce or sell ammo or ammunition to Americans. Gene, what do you think? You want to do a little digging? I know she's there. She's on hold.
Yeah. Okay.
She's maybe working on something else. Okay, that's fine.
No, I will look it up.
Okay, yeah. And if you have a question, there's, you know, on any particular thing, you know, whatever rabbit hole you find, feel free to run down there and see what comes up. I'd be curious. Chappie, have you listened to this? Thanks, Chappie.
Can
you help us out here?
I believe, yeah, there's that rabbit hole. You know, I think there's kind of this little deal like, hey, we're going to pay you not to produce so much ammo and sell it to U.S. distributors and customers. You can sell overseas all you want. Of course, there's probably some caveat to, hey, first you need to fill the government contracts, of course. But, you know, and Vista's and everybody's saying, well, look how many new gun owners and how many bought. But the new gun owners, to them, 50 rounds is like a lot. Oh, my gosh, I shot 50 to 100 rounds this year. To us,
that'll change.
That's, who are shooting thousands a month competing and actually
that's a warm-up.
Gun enthusiasts. Yeah. So you can't really say that, oh, it's just off the shelf. And then of all things, it's like, well, where is it at? Because it's, you know, if you're producing that much, it has to go somewhere, but nobody's really seeing it. So let's,
if you find something, put it on the gun group. We've got, for those who don't know, we have the Action Radio gun group. We have about 20 groups now, I think, specialty groups within Action Radio. We have a legal project. We have a family law project. We have one I can't tell you because it's private. We have, you know, get me offline, everybody. We have several different things, homeschool, you name it, travel. We've got a cruise and travel page because, you know, Shelby does the reports for that. So most of our reporters have their own page, but we have a gun page. And so you're welcome to put, you know, any kind of investigative, and we have a special investigations page too. So either one of those or both would be a good place to post. Let's find out about this. Because this is something I could contact my congressman, the missing in action because he's a public figure with too much hair gel, the one over Matt Gaetz, you know. And so we need to, you're on a district. We need to go up in his office.
I'm just down 87 for me. So
let's chat with us. Let's go drop in on Congressman Gaetz's office and we'll make an appointment with a very civil. Well, here's the other thing too. I haven't really talked about this too. But one of the ideas I had is that we have some really great gun stores in our county. And so I'm thinking we could form our own little gun lobby right here and write legislation and get it to the Second Amendment Foundation, get it to Gun Owners of America, get it to Congressman Gaetz, who is very pro-Second Amendment, and other pro-Second Amendment congresspeople in the Florida delegation. And as other listeners, you know, to the show hear about what we're doing, they can form their own little gun lobby, you know, with friends, gun stores, whatever, in their counties and their states and do the same thing at the congressional, the state, and the local level. So this would be an entire subdivision of Action Radio, our own little gun lobby. Pushing bills that, advocating bills, pushing doesn't sound right, but advocating bills that no one's ever thought of, like, you know, gun stamps, which, I still think it's either a joke or serious, but it's got real potential. You know, if we have food stamps, why can't we have gun stamps? Why can't lower income people, you know, get to help the same way people get food, which is not in the Constitution, to get to something for a right that is in the Constitution? You know, so there's a lot of things that we can explore that no one else has ever thought of. That's the beauty of all this. Yeah.
Yep.
Okay.
And I would love to, you know, go with you, you know, make an appointment, talk to Matt Gaetz, you know, and say, hey, can you investigate this? Because like I said, you know, it's, you know, I was able also, and this is in the Czech Republic, I looked on, I guess, what would be their version online of Bass Pro and all that. And of course, they had ton of U.S. ammo online and primers, but we can't get primers and we're supposed to be the gun-friendly country, France.
Well, these are U.S. primers too, right? This is U.S. manufactured
U.S. primers
in the Czech Republic.
France. France had a bunch of our components. Canada does as well, but unfortunately.
Wait a minute, these places, Canadians can't even own guns. What do they do with all our components?
Canada's got it really weird where you got to have, like, of course, a license and then even to purchase ammo and all that other stuff. So it's a... it's just, you know, kind of amazing how everybody else is getting our stuff, but we can't even get our own.
Okay, this deserves a congressional investigation. This is serious stuff because I'll tell you what, even the liberals recognize that the gun issue is critical to Americans because that's the one right that is so obvious. I mean, free speech is probably the other. Free speech, religion, and guns, you know, are paramount in terms of what Americans really notice when something goes wrong. And especially with all the new gun owners out there, you know, it's and we're talking liberal gun owners and liberals. I don't have a problem with liberals because they believe in the Constitution. They just have a different way of solving our problems. There's usually government solutions, and mine tend to, you know, conservatives tend to be more private solutions. But we still love the country, and we still believe in the Constitution, and we still want the best for our nation. Whereas the Marxists, you know, the ones that are in power now, want to destroy the country. They're hell bent on a course of national suicide and economic treason. And so that's an entirely different thing. But let me just for the folks that are listening too, that are sort of, we try not to get over technical. A round or a cartridge has four components, right? You get the bullet, you got the casing, you got the powder, and you got the primer. The primer is like the ignition; it's like the fuse on a firecracker, although it works faster. So when you strike the primer with the hammer, it dents and it puts chemicals together, which cause a reaction, which causes them to, I don't know if you say explode or control burn or whatever it is. They ignite the powder. The powder creates a gas. The gas expands incredibly rapidly and pushes the bullet down the barrel, which then directs the bullet, you know, to where what you're aiming at. Hopefully that's what you're doing. And so that's how it works. So the primers are key. No primer, no ignition. It'd be like having a rocket on a launch pad that couldn't start the engines. You know, you need something to get it going, and the primer is what it gets it going. So if they restrict primers, and there's always been, the Democrats have always done this. They tried $100 a round tax. That was Daniel Patrick Moynihan several years ago. And if they can restrict one thing, it's like, you know, the gun banners, they don't have to ban guns. They can ban one of the components of the ammo, or they can make it so expensive we can't, you know, practice our Second Amendment rights. So all this stuff kind of ties, there's a real war going on. There's a psychological war as much as anything else.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Well,
go ahead.
And the funny part, talking to my European distributors, they're like, because, you know, a lot of them are in the competition shooting there, and they're like, yeah, we can't get – they're having a hard time getting their stuff, their own brands, because it's all coming to the States, but they can get U.S. stuff. So it's also – and this is just my conspiracy thing on it, too. Isn't it weird that we're having to import, you know, stuff from overseas, and all of a sudden now Biden says, oh, hey, no more Russian ammo? Because the sales of Russian firearms or those style have gone up a lot. You know, everybody's wanting an AK, and because it runs and, you know, it shoots, you know, steel casings, but now he's putting that, you know, blocking that from happening. So I think they know that, hey, we can't stop all the guns, but we can stop the fuel.
Yeah.
So that's personally what I think what's going on. But,
yeah.
The mere fact we can't get our own stuff here in Europe can, and we have to import stuff. It's ridiculous.
Yeah. Yeah, I never wanted to shoot steel casings. I wasn't crazy about them. Yeah, okay, so it's better to get the American-made brass casings. Mm-hmm. Okay. Team Chappy Tactical, I want to talk about that for a minute, because do you do multiple sports with the same team? You know, how does it work?
Yes, we do. We usually shoot – our main thing is USPSA and Steel Challenge. We started branching out, too. We started shooting the Rimfire Precision matches. And then we're also looking at doing another Rimfire Precision style shooting, which is there is still shooting in different positions. It's kind of the same concept as the larger caliber precision, but it's with a 22. Then there's something else called F-class, which is like shooting from prone. That's another precision 22 match that we're looking at getting. I shoot IDPA. Not many other people on our team shoot IDPA.
Oh, I want to shoot it. I'll be joining you there. You know,
yeah.
I'll work up to beat you one day. I'll see how I can do that.
There it goes. But yeah, IDPA, you know, like I said, if you're going to shoot like the running guns, that's basically the way to start is IDPA, then move up to actually the very, very best way to start is Steel Challenge, IDPA, and then go on to USPSA.
Yeah, so let's define our acronyms for our new listeners here. So IDPA, International Defensive Pistol Association, that's one of my favorite events because it's the most realistic scenario building that you might find, you know, in a public defensive situations because you draw, you know, you conceal your firearm, you have to, you know, remove it from the holster when it's concealed and you have more realistic scenarios and it's much more accuracy and you have to use cover. Okay, so you have to shelter yourself and protect yourself. Whereas IPSC, the International Pistol, you know, spray and what? Mm-hmm. No, I'm just teasing. What's it stand for? IPSC.
International Pistol Shooting Practical Shooting Association. It's the international version of USPSA, which is the United States Practical Shooting Association, which is like you said, more of the running gunning. That one's for
but you can stand in the middle. You can stand out in the open. You know, it's not realistic to me. And you can shoot lots of rounds. You know.
Yeah, and you can you can tack reload, which you know you don't have to wait to go to slide lock. You can your stage plan basically. You can unless the stage plan dictates, you can shoot the array of targets as you determine it versus IDPA will usually say you have to shoot target one, target two, and then you get penalties if you shoot target two before target one or if you expose yourself to the target and stuff like that. So, yeah, that's usually the best way to go. And plus, IDPA kind of focuses more on your accuracy because you're going time versus hits. So, let's say your time's 11 flat and, you know, there's five targets and you hit them all in the zero, which is like center mass, then your time is 11. But if, you know, you miss it over and you get a down one, so now you're at 12 seconds and it just keeps adding up. So versus USPSA, then you're starting with hit factors and stuff like that. So certain divisions, you can hit the same spot in the target, you're going to score higher because you're shooting a heavier caliper bullet. So.
Yeah.
And there's some special math to it. So,
Oh, yeah, and it's funny. If you ever go to a match and you watch this, and I recommend people do, watch a competition, you know, see what they actually do. It's quite fascinating. The guys that get out there, and I think we talked on this a little bit before, but they get these fancy guns. They'll take a perfectly good gun that engineers have spent, you know, millions of dollars creating, mm-hmm. right, and they'll rip the guts out of it. You know, well, that's not good enough. I'm going to rebuild it. You know, I can make it better. Yeah. The Bionic Man philosophy, right? So they take their gun, they take out all the stuff that works, and they put in all kinds of other stuff that works too, but it's more expensive, it's finickier, and they say the tolerances are a little better. But, you know, if you don't shoot well, if you don't shoot accurately, the most accurate gun in the world isn't going to help you. And if you put all this stuff on it, it seems to me the only guns that misfired, jammed, had problems, mm-hmm. the more stuff they do to their gun to make it supposedly better, the more I saw those guns failing.
Yeah, and it all depends on the gun, too. It's kind of like, let's say you're drag racing, because that's – so you're drag racing. Let's say you buy a stock Mustang or whatever. Yeah, you rip out the engine, do this stuff. That's kind of like taking a Glock. Now you're going to put these different springs in to make it better for production or limited. Mm-hmm. Open guns, though, are built from the ground up to be race guns. So that's the Formula One of our sport. Mm-hmm. But they are very finicky, too. Those are definitely, unlike a Glock, where, you know, you technically don't have to clean it after each match.
Really?
Yeah, the open guns, you see people in between stages cleaning out their mat.
Oh, you're breaking up a bit there.
Oh,
where'd you go? Oh, you're back now. No, you're not. Chappie?
Yeah, I'm here. Can you hear me?
Okay, you just broke up for a second there. Yeah, okay. All
okay.
Right. So they're cleaning the gun. See, there's the thing. The guns are too finicky. You know, they're clean between stages. You know, it's like the early M16, you know, with the really tight tolerances, and they didn't clean them, and they, you know, and McNamara said, we don't have to clean it, so it's not in the manual, so we don't have to clean it.
Yeah.
You know, it's stupid, right? But they're doing so much stuff to them that they're picky. You know, I like the idea that the gun will fire without cleaning, but I'm still going to clean it at the end of the match.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. That's
supposed to be more IDPA. Supposed to be guns that you're typically going to carry. You're not going to walk into Walmart with a $5,000 2011 honcho under your jacket versus, you know, a Glock 26 or something. So
red dot sight and all that other fancy stuff, mm-hmm. and colors and
and it's
special handles and wide magazine flared.
Yeah.
Not practical. You know?
Yeah. So IDPA is more, it's supposed to be represent more the everyday situations, mm-hmm. and carry and type of firearms. Of course, everybody's going to game it a little bit. You know, you're going to put better springs and a better trigger, which, you know, again, a lot of people do typically when they
but
do get
okay
a
for,
gun.
But that's okay for regular use, too. I mean, you know, which is really
interesting
question.
Everybody changes the sights. So.
I need some optical sights on my Glock, so the fiber optic ones. The whatever those ones, I think that's what they're still called. But you do that work, by the way?
I sure do.
Okay, good. Yeah, we got to talk then. Okay, I'll bring my guns down. Yeah. But the idea that these are just regular. No, here's the thing too. In terms of liability, and I know you're not a lawyer, unless you are a lawyer and you haven't told me. But in terms of liability, if you have a gun that has, you know, a more competitive, you know, spring or other technology like that, does that make you any more liable if you change a factory gun? Do weird defensive lawyers go after you if you're forced to use it in a defensive situation?
Well, first, my disclaimer, I'm not an attorney.
Okay.
However, though...
He plays one on the radio, though, sometimes. No, just kidding.
Yeah, I do. however, if, you know, any attorney is going to flip it on you saying, oh, you had a hair trigger, you wanted this to happen because you set up your gun for this.
Mm-hmm.
In a matter of fact, in... Glock makes a New York trigger that is like, mm-hmm. 7 pounds because they wanted the New York Police Department wanted to make sure when their officers were pulling the trigger, they knew that they were pulling the trigger versus they're nervous and all of a sudden their finger just, you know, went off on a hair trigger, on a very light trigger. So, yeah, if you have something that's, you know, that you did all this, as everybody says, make it a Gucci Glock, you know, you do all these slide cuts and
Gucci
all
Glock
designs and all these everything, you know, they're going to come down and say, hey, you wanted this to happen. You know, attorney's going to flip it on you and say, hey, your trigger was so light that it just went off, you know, and you really didn't defend yourself. So I tell people, if it's your carry gun, other than maybe changing the sights.
Disappeared again. Where'd you go? I hate when this happens. Chappie's on microphone for the first time today, and it's working out pretty well until now. Oh, He dropped. Okay, probably going to call back in. Let's go to Jean and see if I can get her back, see if she's found some stuff at this point. If not, I'm going to play our Santa Rosa volunteer and go back to our second hour. What'd you get?
Yes, I did find the phone number. There is a different one, and that's 850-245-4210.
Yeah, so that's the one. That's directly to the...
And the other one, that was what they gave me to go to the, I think, just their general switchboard. But what I could find from the information I got was that there's a shortage because of demand. There's just been too high a demand.
Nah, that's not right. That's partially what's going on, but there's more to it than that. Because I believe the government do that. All right, I'm going to send Chappie a message just to call us back. We'll see if you can get that. Call back.
The articles I found, that was according to the Biden administration. So that's all we need to say.
Yeah. Okay. Looks like I got Chappie back by cell phone now. Let's check this out here. Chappie, you back with us now?
Yeah, can you hear me now?
Yeah, yeah. So that's the back. I should have told you the backup plan too. So the mic was working great. I mean, it sounded fantastic.
Yeah.
Did it just cut out or something or what?
What happened? No, it looked like the link dropped off or something. So, and it says start your call now. And it clicked this. So probably some technical. Okay. I mean, Wi-Fi is up, so we'll get it worked out. But I don't know what you heard last is about, making the trigger lighter and doing all
we got the New York
stuff,
trigger, and then we kind of stopped there. And we should talk about what 7 pounds of trigger pull is. What's a normal revolver round? What's a normal semi-auto, double action, single action? So people have an idea of pound. I think normal is like 3 pounds, isn't it, for a typical revolver?
Typical stock. Well, it depends. Double action, single action. There, you're looking probably 5 pound double action. 3.5, 4 pounds single action, which is a big difference. A stock Glock is typically 5 to 5.5 pounds.
For every pull?
For just about, yeah.
Yeah, okay.
And
so
now,
that's not an accidental kind of thing. It's not like, Quigley Down Under where they had the set trigger and then they have the hair trigger, it's like the lightest touch. So you don't,
You're running like competition guns, people are running like 1.5, 2 pound triggers. The New York trigger, of course, like I said, they're made to make sure that their officers knew when they're pulling that trigger that they were pulling the trigger, not having their finger on the trigger, pointing at assailant or something, and it went off. Well, I tell a lot of customers too, if it's going to be their concealed carry, other than changing the sights, keep it stock because, like we were talking about earlier, that an attorney is going to find any reason to turn it back on you. And plus, you're going to do all these things to trick out your gun or whatever. It's going to go in evidence. So now, even you're in the right, it's going to go in evidence. You may never see that gun that you just dumped. You took a $600 gun, you dumped another $600 into, you might never see that firearm again. So.
Yeah. Does it get lost or they just keep them or does an officer walk out with them? I mean, I've heard horror stories. What happens to the guns once they get in once they're taken for a criminal proceeding?
Typically they sit there. You always hear stories like people mess with them in back there in the evidence locker. And so
let's try this one. This looks like fun. Let's test fire. Okay, fine.
You heard horror stories, but so I need to get off here in a minute, but next week, just to let everybody know, we will be shooting in New Smyrna, Florida for the Area 6 Steel Challenge match. So I will try to call you in from down there. And give
do
you
a
like
play-by-play.
Play.
Be great. Be our on the on the our on the location or what was it called, on location reporter or something like that. Yeah.
Yeah.
So you need a radio voice. And this is Chappie reporting from the great match here in Smyrna, Florida. Yes, come on down. No, I'm just sorry. Yeah.
So actually, we have quite a few matches coming up. So the weekend after that, we will be shooting the big USPSA match in Dothan, Alabama.
Okay.
The weekend after that, we're going to be in Hattiesburg, Mississippi. So there's quite a bit of competition going on within this area there, larger matches. So I will definitely give the range report next week from on the road.
That sounds wonderful. And again, we have the extra hour, so you can call earlier, you can call the same time, you know, you can even call it later into the third hour. So any of those that, this would be the third hour then. Whatever works for you best is fine with me. That's wonderful. And you can post your matches right to the Action Radio group. Post your matches to the Action Radio group so people can, especially the local folks in the area can find out where they are. Yeah. Because I'll be joining you soon. I just, I'm getting the show organized to the point where I want it. Where I'll be able to actually do some more stuff on my own, which will be wonderful. Yep. Thank you, sir. Appreciate your report. Yeah, great.
Hey, no problem. You have a great weekend.
You too. Take care now. All right, we have so much to do. I'm going to play a couple more things in the next hour. Let me we talked about – I haven't done my COVID PSA for a while. In fact, I've sort of been avoiding talking about vaccine stuff. Let me just play this, and then I'll get into some other things when we get back.
This is Greg Penglis for Action Radio. You've all heard those ads for people who have suffered medical or health tragedies, which say you may be entitled to compensation. But if you have suffered injuries or crippling diseases or medical procedures that went horribly wrong, it's not the compensation you need, it's the knowledge you should have had before the condition you suffer from now. So that you are never in that position in the future, I strongly recommend that you do not get any COVID vaccines. Get informed. Do your own research. For 99.97% of Americans, your natural immunity will give you, at worst, only moderate symptoms of COVID. If you've already had COVID, it's virtually impossible to get it again. There are effective cures for COVID, which will get you completely over the virus. There is no cure for the COVID-19 vaccines. Once you start down the road of DNA modification, there is no going back.
I want to play this for you too. It's something I made before the election, November 3rd, and it was half joke because I never expected Biden to actually, be in the White House because he had no support. He never campaigned. He's a criminal. His whole family is a political mafia. It was unimaginable to me that this, aging, moron. And I don't mean that just because of his degraded mental faculties. I'm not trying to pick on him for that because stuff happens to people. I'm sorry about that. But just the fact that he's never been right. He's always been a jerk. He's always been a power-hungry globalist. He's always been a political prostitute. And so I thought, there's no way this guy can get elected. You look at the rallies. You have 20,000 people or 50,000 people at a Trump rally, another 20 to 50,000 waiting to get in. Biden couldn't fill eight circles, so, and he didn't even campaign. He was out there in his basement the whole time. So, the idea that he beat Trump is intellectually impossible. And so I made this before the election kind of as a joke. But the problem is, once again, as Jim said earlier, I hate being right. Me too. I hate being right.
Joe Biden's dark winter. No freedom, no liberty, no guns. No representation, no oil, no coal, no nuclear power, no space force, no constitution, no family gatherings, no vacations, just taxes, work, misery, masks, lockdowns, and ever more government. This is what will happen if you let Marxists steal the election. This has been a public service announcement of Action Radio, reminding you it's time to get off your butt and save your country.
Gene, I don't think you've heard that too many times, but I don't think I've got a comment on it from you. I want to bring you back on here and see if you're able to locate any of our any of Chappie's ideas that the government is somehow influencing, coercing, extorting our gun companies not to sell ammunition and components to Americans. What do you think about Biden? It's wild how everything in there is actually happening.
Right. Yeah. I have not been able to find anything so far, as I said, other than what I just told you. But that would make sense.
Yeah. Okay, don't worry about for now. Well, I can dig on my own, over the weekend. We've got certainly time, and I'm going to follow up with Chappie on that. Because he's got insights. I mean, he talks to, all kinds of deals. I didn't know he had the European connections, but that's going to be fascinating to explore that too. And we can check out the European gun situation. I know the Czech Republic is very, I think even Second Amendment friendly, gun friendly. I think they even have a version of the Second Amendment in the Czech Constitution. So they're doing some pretty good stuff. All right, we're going to take this is an open hour. And so anybody wants to call us, 215-383-3832 to discuss pretty much anything you want. Hopefully Josie and Pianchi might join us again. But also I want to go into something that I've had at the bottom of my computer for a couple of weeks now, and we really haven't spent the time to talk about it. So now that we have this third hour here, I'm going to get into that in just a little bit. But in the meantime, let me play our piece from Santa Rosa Volunteers, and this is on Federalist Paper number 5. And if you've noticed the sort of trend that I've been going to with these presentations, I'm really coming down on the side of the anti-federalists. And so with everything I do, you know, it's biased, it's opinionated, it's what I think, and I think that gives you the chance to agree or disagree based on the evidence and the information that I'm presenting to you. And so in that regard, this is it's an interesting journey as we go through this. And if you want to go to our YouTube page, you know, Action Radio Founding Moments, you'll be able to get all of them. I've got like 16 of these so far on our founding documents. And I'm going to have, you know, a couple hundred by the time I'm done, because we're going to go through all the Federalist Papers. That's 85, and plus another 85 anti-Federalist Papers. That's 170 right there, and plus various other documents, you know, Constitution, Articles of Confederation, Mayflower Compact, maybe the state constitutions. Who knows? We'll see where we get. But anyway, let me play this for now, and then I'll be back in about 6 minutes or so, and I'm going to pick up on this whole idea of the IRS invading your bank account and tracking everything you do. So more to Action Radio. We're not done. We have a lot more to go.
This is Greg Penglis for Action Radio with Founding Moments, insights into our founding documents, sponsored by Santa Rosa Volunteers here in Santa Rosa County, Florida. Santa Rosa Volunteers is available at their website, srv1776.com. That's srv1776.com. Federalist Papers number 5. Once again, we return to the elitist national government promoting and future Supreme Court Chief Justice John Jay. It's hard to imagine any of his court opinions were of much use, given he returns to his favorite tactic of starting with a false hypothesis, using a false comparison for evidence, and making up his predetermined conclusion with absolutely no progression of evidence to prove his case. His basic premise is that since England and Scotland formed an entire and perfect union, which is something he got from a letter by Queen Anne back in 1706 when the states were mere colonies, that we could do exactly the same here with our states. He was, in fact, modeling our oppressor to use as evidence that we can have as good a union as England and Scotland. I guess John Jay had never heard of William Wallace and the various troubles between England and Scotland over the centuries. I wonder if, like General Milley, he knew his counterpart in England. The reason this is a false comparison is that England is a monarchy and therefore irrelevant to comparison to our states under the Articles of Confederation. Their people aren't even citizens, they are subjects. Scotland has been under the thumb and control of England also for centuries, as the King of England is also the King of Scotland, so again, this is hardly a voluntary or equal union, as are the states under the Articles of Confederation. From royalcentral.co.uk comes the current title of Queen Elizabeth II, which reads, Elizabeth II, by the grace of God, of the United Kingdom of Great Britain and Northern Ireland, and of her other realms and territories, Queen, head of the Commonwealth, defender of the faith, with the style of Majesty. One has to wonder if John Jay was secretly a monarchist, and not just an elitist national government proponent. He never speaks of individual rights, and only of a strong national government with a strong national defense to defend against all enemies, real or imagined. Which brings us to the false evidence and made-up conclusion. He argues that the only way the states can defend themselves is to be under a strong national government, and that is why 3 or 4 confederacies that might form without a strong constitution would make America indefensible. And yet, the colonies, before the Articles of Confederation, threw off the oppression of the British monarchy John Jay is using in Federalist No. 5 for the model for our new nation. I'm sure this did not win him converts. He repeats himself again in this paper when he writes, "It was remarked in the preceding paper that weakness and divisions at home would invite dangers from abroad, and that nothing would tend more to secure us from them than union, strength, and good government within ourselves." He doesn't define or describe the 3 or 4 confederacies he tries to convince us the states will degenerate into if the Constitution is not passed. This is directly countered by the 13 individual states at the time of this paper, which were operating rather well as one confederacy. But John Jay is convinced that he can generate the fear with this bogus argument to scare people into running to a national government for safety. Does this sound familiar to anyone? Why else would he make all this stuff up? John Jay does define one of his confederacies by saying, "The North is generally the region of strength, and many local circumstances render it probable that the most northern of the proposed confederacies would, at a period not very distant, be unquestionably more formidable than any of the others." This is rather prophetic and ironic that the Confederacy of the Civil War, formed under the very Constitution John Jay was arguing would prevent such confederacies. Jay writes that each confederacy would be as distinct nations, with individual treaties with foreign nations. Of this, he said, "Hence, it might and probably would happen that the foreign nation with whom the Southern Confederacy might be at war would be the one with whom the Northern Confederacy would be the most desirous of preserving peace and friendship." He always writes of conflict that might happen, but he never acknowledges that his fears are never realized by the states while operating under the Articles of Confederation, or that the states had a mutual support and friendship pact through the Articles, such that if one state was attacked by a foreign power, the other states would immediately rush to the defense. The colonies had neither an army, a navy, nor a national government, but created a continental army and navy nonetheless, and won independence from England. This goes against the doom and gloom of Jay's imaginary scenarios of why something that is working won't work. So what exactly was John Jay talking about? Seems to me he has a predetermined conclusion in search of evidence and comparisons that don't exist. The source for the Federalist Papers is federalistpapers.org. The Anti-Federalist Papers are from selfeducatedamerican.com. The Articles of Confederation are from usconstitution.net. This is Greg Penglis for Action Radio with Founding Moments, sponsored by Santa Rosa Volunteers. Their website is srv1776.com. That's srv1776.com. Please share this report to anyone who needs it. I really enjoy making these. It's a fascinating challenge, and of course I have more revelations, and every time I make one of our Founding Moments episodes, it gives me more information that I can use, you know, on the show and then for the different arguments we have, especially with the question that came up yesterday with Claire Lopez. And the question is, you know, where is it in the Constitution that, you know, Biden can be removed? And we covered that in the first hour, and you're welcome to comment on that again at any time. A couple of things to talk about before we get to the last topic I have, the last big topic I have for today, and that is our new webmaster, Eric Colley, who's also a sponsor here at Action Radio. And so I want to let you know that our new webmaster deserves credit, you know, for all that he's doing. If you want to see what he's doing, take a look at our new writeyourlaws.com. That's WriteYourLaws, writeyourlaws.com. And so, you know, if you want to benefit as much as I did, then get in touch with him. Okay, and so let me see if I can. Oh, here we go. Sorry, I was. This is the 3 hours is different. I got to get used to my 3 hours here. So we'll get that going. Anyway, you'd find him under small business marketing. You know, Eric Colley offers proven, cost-effective strategies to help small businesses, startups, and nonprofits market themselves on Google Page One, gain thousands of followers, and be far more competitive. And this is the good part, without paid advertising. Okay. If you want to get in touch with Eric, and that's E-R-I-C-A-W-L-E-Y, phone number 208-999-7510. That's 208-999-7510. And you can email him, eric@bsmallbusiness.com. And if you miss any of this, just, you know, catch the podcast. But that's Eric at bsmallbusiness.com, and his website is bsmallbusiness.com, bsmallbusiness.com. And I make him a really cool commercial. So he's a little bit better flowing than you know, just reading stuff to you. But yeah, he's done amazing work and continues to do amazing work on our website. All right, a couple things, a little housekeeping here. Oh, Gene, you want to get in here? Yeah, what's on your mind?
Yes.
You like our website?
Yeah, someone was on the chat was asking about the Arizona recount and that Trump didn't win because preliminary reports are showing that Biden actually got a few more votes than what he had before. And
okay. So
that will be interesting to see what actually comes out today. Is it true? Is it not? I don't know.
I do. It's not true that Biden won Arizona. That's a big myth. Again, think of it from a logical perspective. He campaigned from he didn't even campaign. He lived in a basement. He never went to rallies. He never got anybody at those imaginary rallies. He never, you know, made speeches. He never had, you know, really, he never made his own campaign ads. He never did anything. He never explained why he wanted to be president. He never did anything that would even come close to be considered a campaign. And Trump was wildly popular. Things were going well, you know, except for COVID, which totally sucked because he listened to all the wrong people. But you figure the economy was in great shape. Gas prices were in great shape. We're energy independent. China had tariffs. North Korea wasn't launching missiles. You know, NATO was paying their fair share. The border was closed like it was supposed to be. You know, taxes were lower. Regulations were fewer. You know, you take out that all. Those are all the things Americans want. Okay. Nobody wants what Biden has. You know, to think that, you know, even if he didn't run honestly, which he didn't, people know what Democrats do. Open the border, get rid of your energy, seal off the drilling, you know, go back to paying the ridiculous fees for NATO to defend them. You know, have American money go out, have American jobs go out, have American energy go out, block energy for Americans. And now what Chappie was talking about, you know, allow companies to sell, you know, ammo overseas, but not allow them to sell them to Americans. Or at least restrict the flow somehow, restrict our rights, restrict our guns, restrict our freedom, restrict our churches under COVID, restrict our economic businesses under lockdown, restrict our kids with masks on their face. Do you think anybody in their right mind would vote for that? Unless they're an ardent communist, Marxist, godless, you know, person that believes in absolute power, absolutely. No, there's no way that Biden could win, you know, under those conditions. It's impossible. It's intellectually impossible, and all the math proves it, the stats prove it, everything you can think of proves that it is impossible for him to have won. That's why I think that what they're saying is wrong. Play that back a couple of times for yourself. That was a good rant. Gene?
Yeah, I'm just waiting for everything to come out, because even if he does have more votes, are they legal votes? Because if the audit really...
Well, then they're not votes, are they?
Yeah,
it's
exactly.
Not legal. See, that's the thing. When Democrats says make every vote count, they want the illegal ones. Okay. Well, those aren't votes. All right. If you have no chain of custody, it's not a vote. You know, if you can't identify an absentee ballot as coming from an envelope with a signature, it's not a vote. Okay. There's a difference between a ballot and a vote. Okay. A ballot is a piece of paper that's marked either by machine illegally or person. You know, that goes through a Dominion internet machine or some kind of optical scanner or something like that. Those are ballots. But they're not votes until they're judged to be legal, okay? And that can happen long after the election. That's what an audit is for. It's to determine the votes from the ballots. That's the difference. People, you really need to get that clear in your head. Yeah, go ahead.
Right, and I would think, too, if they were saying, if the reports that came out earlier, and they were saying how many people voted that were either dead, voted twice, were no longer living there, those should all be thrown out. And if they're all thrown out, then... I don't know how they can say that Biden won by 300 and some extra more votes than he had before, unless Trump had all these people, people voting for him, but I don't think that was the case.
They made them up, Gene. This is what happened the first time. They made them up. See, the thing is, too, I would also make it illegal for any vote count to stop until the results are announced, all right?
Right.
In other words, this idea that they could stop in the middle of the night, send everybody out.
Every place, every you know, how many states did that? Right there, that's a red flag.
So what they should do is stop the vote count wherever the vote was when they closed it down. That's the vote count. Everything after that, you know, was fraud because they interrupted the process. They ruined the chain of command. They did things. They brought suitcases of ballots from under desks. You know, they brought truckloads of stuff in. All the things that happened after the vote counting stopped in any precinct, none of that should count. And they know what the totals were because they were announced. They were on TV. They have records. They know what the vote counts were before they shut down. Well, that's your actual total. I've been saying this ever since November 3rd. That's the vote. Now when someone gets a hold of us on live chat, first of all, I want to thank the person that used the live chat. Does it give first name or like where they're calling or where they're texting from, or is it all anonymous? I'm just curious.
It's a username.
It's that again?
It's a username.
I'll have to use it. Okay, so all right, that's fine too. So if somebody wants their username announced or their location announced on the show, just put that in your message. Put that in your text message, you know, to us, or user chat message. You know, say, yeah, my first name is, and I'm calling from you know, Arizona. Just to say,
okay.
Let's get Pianki back on the line here, and then I'm going to go into my other topic just a little bit. Sir, Reverend, welcome back to the show.
Well, you know, as I've been saying, the only transparent way to do presidential elections is have separate ballots, Greg, separate ballots from state and local.
Yep.
Because these states are never going to do right.
Yeah. You know, Pianki wrote a bill on this, by the way, too. So it's at writeyourlaws.com. You might want to send that to, just trying to think who would be the best place. Some voter, like Georgia and I think Arizona have voter integrity projects. You know, Voter Georgia and both of them. You know, I would send those bills to those organizations and see if you get some response, because they might help you out with supporting that bill. I haven't done support as much as I should.
Somebody told me that a congressperson brought this up. I got to find out which one did.
Yeah.
I got to find out from him who told me. But no, but that's the only way, because these states are going to do what they're going to do. And you can't be standing over their shoulder every moment of the time. So leave them the hell alone.
It's actually more of corrupt Democrat cities that are really doing this. You know, and it's not always Democrat, because Maricopa County, Arizona, which has Phoenix, that's what we're talking about, is Phoenix in Arizona. Most of the county commission of Maricopa is Republican, but they're deep state. So there's no difference between a deep state Republican and deep state Democrat if they believe in, you know, a Marxist oppressive government. You know, see, that's the problem. And so it's not the whole state. I mean, the state of Arizona, you know, voted for Trump overwhelmingly. Maricopa County, you know, needs to be thrown out, because that's where the fraud is. And you don't have to, you know, as Bill Barr's standard, that you have to show enough fraud to overturn the result is nonsense. Fraud of any kind. It's like if somebody, you know, takes steroids in a race, right, and they come in
fraud
third.
Fraud
is fraud. Yeah, if someone takes steroids in a race and they're determined to use an illegal drug, the fact that they came in third is irrelevant. They still get disqualified. Okay, you don't have to win the race to get disqualified. All right. And so same thing
Absolutely.
Here. If there's vote fraud in Maricopa County, then Maricopa County gets thrown out, because if there's vote fraud, there's no way to determine the actual count. So the fraud itself should disqualify the whole county, and that would disqualify future, you know, vote fraud, because the whole vote's going to get thrown out anyway once it's found.
And
it's easy to find,
like,
both. Go ahead, Jane.
I was
going to
say,
if
something like that would happen,
uh-huh.
then I think a lot of other places would think twice about voter fraud.
Exactly.
That's supposed to happen all over the place.
Well, you've got to take the success out of vote fraud. So right now it's successful. Look at California. Now, granted, as Claire points out, it's a liberal state. It might have done this anyway. I'm not sure. You know, if you take out the illegal aliens, you take out all the vote fraud, you know, of course, the problem is a lot of it is left Florida, California, too, so it's hard to judge that. But what's the real result? And you won't know. So if you don't know, you should throw it out and do another election until you do know. And you might have to do four or five of these until people get the message that vote fraud doesn't work. Anyway, let me change the subject here, because we've got about, 3 hours are going fast now, too. I thought 2 hours went fast. 3 hours is going by fast, too. We've got 33 minutes left. So let's talk about this financial scandal that's going on. This is from the American Institute of Economic Research, or for Economic Research, and it's called Biden's Wrecking Ball for Financial Privacy, September 22nd, 2021, James Bovard. James Bovard, I actually have been in contact with, and so I think I'll see, now that I know it's him, I forgot him wrote this, he who wrote this, I'm going to see if I can get him on the show here. So James says, the Biden insurrection, my word, is seeking to compel banks to report to the IRS any bank account with more than $600 in transactions per year. Well, I guarantee you that's everybody. If you get a paycheck and deposit it, and your cumulative paycheck is more than $600, which I'm pretty much assured is most people's, they're going to monitor everything you do. So this idea is 600 transactions.
Okay, are they going to look at Hunter's too?
Say that again?
Are they going to look at Hunter's too?
Probably not, because he's a protected person. Well, again, the law is applied. The law isn't the problem necessarily. Well, this law is a problem. The real problem is the application of the law. I mean, why isn't Hillary, why didn't Hillary go before the Durham Commission? because Durham was a plant. He was a deep state person. So that's the problem. Let me get a little more detail here so people understand the depth of this problem. So it says the IRS, you know, reports to the IRS any bank account with more than $600 in transactions. Well, that's like every week for most people, all right? This proposal is a linchpin of Biden's American Families Plan and will supposedly help generate almost $500 billion in federal revenue over the next decade. How, I'm not sure, unless they're taxing transactions, but we'll see as this article goes. I said the previous catch-all financial reporting requirements have helped spur national disasters, complete with pervasive federal looting. Well, there you go. Senator Mike Crapo, Republican of Idaho, denounced the Biden proposal as a surveillance dragnet, a huge violation of privacy, an egregious abuse of Americans' right to due process by inferring that all U.S. taxpayers are guilty of evading taxes until proven otherwise. Yeah, it's guilty until proven innocent. Paul Mirsky of the Independent Community Bankers of America, and I've got an article by them next, warns that the Biden proposal would be a historic invasion of financial privacy like we've never seen before. Mirsky also declared the IRS is absolutely incapable of handling or processing this massive amount of new data, and they would admit as much. That's why they're asking for an additional $80 billion, that's what it'd be, billion dollars in this budget. Actually, federal money cops have long been overwhelmed by too many reports from banks. Prior federal reporting requirements buried bureaucrats in useless reports and became a de facto terrorist hijacker empowerment act. The 9/11 attacks were preceded by the biggest failure ever by U.S. financial authorities. That's fascinating. The Bank Secrecy Act of 1970 made it a federal crime for banks to keep secrets from the government. Well, that's interesting. Thinking from us, though, right? The law obliged banks and other financial institutions to submit a currency transaction report, a CTR, to the federal government for each cash transaction involving more than $10,000. Okay, that's been around for quite a while. That's the so-called anti-terrorist money laundering thing, drug dealer thing, right? Okay, so the feds harvested 17 million CTRs in 2000. Federal agencies were flooded with tons of paper that bureaucrats often never bothered to examine. Yeah, it's one thing to collect all this information, but someone's got to look at it. This is why I don't worry about government privacy invading our privacy. They collect all our phone calls, but who's going to listen to them? All right, there's too many phone calls. There's too much information. They can't possibly process it all. So we're actually protected by them searching everybody in ways that if they went after certain individuals, you know, would be different. Although I think they're certainly going after certain individuals. You know, I'll be on their list very soon if I'm not already. Anyway, they said beginning in 1996, banks were also obliged to file a suspicious activity report on any transaction that, quote, had no business or apparent lawful purpose or is not the sort in which the particular customer would normally be expected to engage. Well, that's prior restraint. That's assuming facts not in evidence. That's guilty until proven innocent. That is so blatantly illegal, I can't tell you. Back to the article. The feds were soon receiving 200,000 suspicious activity reports per year. Yeah, because the banks don't want to be negligent. They don't want to miss something, so they're going to over-report, right? This is how this works. Greg Nojeim, N-O-J-E-I-M, of the American Civil Liberties Union observed, Congress barred financial institutions from telling their customers that their bank had spied on them by reporting their transactions to the federal government. So this wasn't even known. The deluge, let me give one or two more paragraphs and I'll get you guys for comments. That deluge of reports provided a smokescreen for the 9/11 plotters. Well, this is interesting. A 2002 United Nations report on terrorist financing noted that a, quote, suspicious transaction report had been filed with the U.S. government over a $69,985 wire transfer that Mohammed Atta, you should know that name, leader of the hijackers, received from the United Arab Emirates. Yeah, and you thought it was all Saudi Arabia. However, the report noted this particular transaction was not noticed quickly enough because the report was just one of a very large number and was not distinguishable from those related to other financial crimes. Yeah, it's like when the flight instructors reported that people were wanting to learn how to take off and fly, but they weren't concerned about learning how to land. You know, that got completely lost in all the other FBI reports. It's fascinating. ATA was on a terrorist watch list, but the avalanche of other reports the feds received targeting home buyers, boat buyers, and other innocuous transactions provided sufficient cover for the attack to proceed. Let me hold up there. Comments?
I would say not just no, but hell no. I mean, I don't know what Biden is getting at, because the thing is, I guess it's what we talked about before, when you're the one that does it, but you're projecting on other people, that's exactly what this is, because we all know that he got so much corrupt money from Hunter and all Hunter's illegal, whatever was going on in all the other countries, No one's ever looked into that. So why are they, I guess that makes sense, because it's always, he's always trying to look at Americans, and I would say middle-class American or just regular American people, and trying to put the screws in on them. It just, that's just what he seems to be, or who he seems to be.
Yeah. Piaki, you want to come on this? Oh, I think he's muted himself. That's okay. I will proceed on because this is a fascinating article. Again, American Institute for Economic Research, James Bovard, September, I think 21st it was. He says, rather than recognize how pointless reporting requirements swamped federal watchdogs, Congress responded to 9/11 by vastly expanding federal financial vacuum cleaners. On October 17, 2001, Representative Ron Paul, Republican of Texas, who we know well on the show here, we've talked about him enough, was the only member of the House to oppose the International Money Laundering Abatement and Anti-Terrorist Financing Act of 2001, probably because it should have been labeled the Anti-American Search Every American Assume They're Guilty Act of 2001. That's what it should have been called, but it wasn't. They give these fancy titles so people are you know, compelled to vote for them, because who wants to vote against money laundering and terrorist financing, right? So this is how they do it. It's like the Affordable Care Act. It wasn't about care, and it wasn't affordable. All right. Anyway, back to the article, which became Title III of the Patriot Act. Okay. So let me say that title again. The International Money Laundering Abatement and Anti-Terrorist Financing Act of 2001 became Title III of the Patriot Act. Paul warned that the bill, quote, has more to do with ongoing war against financial privacy than with the war against international terrorism, and derided it as a, quote, laundry list of dangerous, unconstitutional power grabs. These measures will actually distract from the battle against terrorism by encouraging law enforcement authorities to waste time snooping through the financial records of innocent Americans who simply happen to demonstrate an, quote, unusual pattern in their financial dealings. Paul's warnings were prescient. The Patriot Act turbocharged reporting requirements, and the feds are now receiving 2 million suspicious activity reports a year. It would be worse than naive to assume that all reports that banks send to Washington will sit passively in federal databases. Comments? I'd like to stop partway through and see who's got Gene.
It's crazy.
Yeah.
It's crazy.
This is so good article. I'm going to finish it, and then we can talk about this a little bit. I've got other articles too. Financial reporting requirements help spur one of the most disgraceful federal looting sprees in modern times. The IRS has exploited the technicalities of the Bank Secrecy Act, which requires banks to report any transaction over $10,000, to preemptively confiscate the bank accounts of innocent Americans. The IRS, quote, enforced the Bank Secrecy Act by presuming that anyone who deposited slightly less than $10,000 was a criminal. Okay, that was people did that so they didn't have to they deposit $9,990 to sort of get around the $10,000 reporting requirement. But well, you must have done that because you're guilty of a crime. You can't assume that, you idiots. Anyway, the IRS seized $250 million because it disapproved of how businesses and individuals structured their bank deposits and withdrawals. IRS bureaucrats don't even need to file a criminal charge before snaring citizens' life savings. Now, can you think of any provisions of the Constitution that might have a little problem with this? I can. You know, Fourth Amendment, right to be secure in your, you know, person, home, papers, and effects from unreasonable searches and seizures. You know, Fifth Amendment, right to due process before you lose your life, liberty, or property. This would be your property, okay? So there's nothing constitutional about this. That's the whole problem with the Patriot Act. That's why we need to abolish it. I mean, another project for us, too. Get rid of the Patriot Act because it has nothing to do with constitutional government and everything to do with prior appropriation and government, you know, oppression of all of us. Yeah, you can bet the government employees don't have to report stuff. I bet you they're exempt from banks reporting on them, too. Anyway, it says between 2005 and 2012, the number of IRS seizures for Bank Secrecy Act violations rose more than fivefold, but the vast majority of victims were never criminally prosecuted for structuring offenses. All right? One-third of those cases involved nothing more than making a series of sub-$10,000 cash transactions. Well, if you've got a cash business, that would make sense to make cash transactions. See a retail business. I'll give you a perfect example. Chinatown in San Francisco. That whole Chinatown operates on cash. It just does. They don't want the reporting requirements. They don't want the hassles. They don't want they're cash. You better have cash to go to Chinatown, okay? So how many people are making sub-$10,000 transactions every week? I'd say a lot. okay? Or they're just keeping the money themselves, or they're putting it in offshore accounts or somewhere else to get around all this crap so they don't have to give up their money and then prove that they didn't do anything in order to get it back. Gene, did you have a comment?
No, but that makes sense.
Yeah. Going on here, the Institute for Justice reported a 2017 Inspector General report found no evidence in 91% of the forfeiture cases. Let me try that again. No evidence in 91% of the forfeiture cases that the money came from illegal activities. The IRS chose to seize first and ask questions later, if at all. IRS investigators simply looked at banking records and then confiscated the accounts of hundreds of people. Okay. Now, here's the problem. You know, if you're going to fight the IRS, you got to have money because you need a lawyer. All right. So a lot of people would lose money, and it was cheaper to lose the money than it was to fight to get the money back. It would probably cost more to get the money back than the money they lost. So not only is the IRS stealing money and dropping it into their accounts or the government accounts or the treasurer, who knows where their money's going, it was prohibitive for people to fight back because the IRS has all the money, all the lawyers, all the time that they on their side. And you know, especially if it costs more to get your money back. Even if it costs a fraction of what it was to get your money back. Most people couldn't afford to get their money back in the process. This is why you need to arrest these people and throw them in jail for doing a law that has no basis, no constitutional basis whatsoever. And where was Congress? They didn't care because they were getting money, right? So this is the problem with asset forfeiture. So now to contrast that with how we use asset forfeiture in our bill to create an illegal alien-free zone here in Santa Rosa County, Florida. Okay, our whole basis of enforcement is asset forfeiture, but there's a difference. When you're enforcing against illegal aliens, first of all, they don't have constitutional rights because they can't be here. And I've been arguing this for a while. You can't have rights in a place you can't be in because exercising them is exercising them is impossible. So if you can't be there, you can't exercise rights because you can't be there. So you can't have rights in the first place. Okay, so. You put this together. So when we do asset forfeiture, hopefully the county does it on illegal aliens, you know, who bought houses, bought cars, you know, own businesses. We take all their stuff, make it impossible for them to live here. That's a local law enforcement procedure. But all that'd be established is that somebody's here in the country illegally and you can take all their stuff. And citizenship is not a private thing. It's a public disclosure. So this is public information, not a problem. So that's different than seizing the property of Americans who do have constitutional rights and legal, lawful immigrants and naturalized citizens and, you know, permanent residents and things like that who do have constitutional rights, okay? Because they are under the jurisdiction of the 14th Amendment, subject to the jurisdiction by citizenship and by legal standing. But illegal aliens don't have that, so we can take all their stuff, okay? That's different. That's the proper use of asset forfeiture. And the proper use against Americans and lawful immigrants, naturalized and permanent residents, is due process. And once you go through due process and conviction, then you can take their stuff. That's the big difference. Let me break here for any comments. I'll move on to more of this act. This is fascinating. Piaki, is that you or Gene?
I don't have a comment.
Okay.
But the thing is, has to do with just the IRS in itself. I just question how ethical, moral they are. And the reason I say that is years ago I worked with someone, worked with his daughter, and he was, I don't know how we got onto this subject, but he was telling me that he didn't pay taxes. And he goes, well, not that I have to worry because I used to work with the IRS, so I know those guys. And so basically it's just like any other corrupt bureaucratic or bureaucratic federal thing that is, you know, one thing for us and something totally different for those involved.
That's what they should send.
Agents they're going to have to hire to carry that out.
Exactly.
So they got $80 billion. You know, they can hire a bunch of agents with $80 billion. And here's the other thing, too. IRS agents.
Where is all this money coming from?
Well, where it always comes from. Taxing or borrowing.
Oh, there's not a printing company?
Printing company for what? Printing money? Well, that's true, too.
Yeah,
taxing,
yeah.
Borrowing, and printing.
But
they have to borrow it in order to print it. They have to there's a mechanism by, and I should get Derek to go over that again. Kind of miss Derek's financial report because that's a good question for him. Yeah, what's the, you know, Acme Printing Company? You know, yeah. $50 here. One-stop shopping.
Yeah, they do have to borrow before they print it. They have to, what do you call that, doggone it? You have to make a expense. Say we're going to build approve an aircraft carrier.
Mm-hmm.
Then they have to borrow the money from the
well, that's appropriate.
Now they sell bonds to the Federal Reserve tells the U.S. Treasury to print up the money for the aircraft carrier.
Yep. So they borrow the money. The Treasury prints it. It goes into circulation for however they spend it, you know, and that's fake money. It's not real because it was created out of thin air, and that's the biggest problem. We have so much money created out of nothing because it's not based on wealth. It's based on government printing, spending, and borrowing, and that doesn't help the economy. I mean, what helps the economy is private spending, which creates wealth. You know, private
then
industry.
What they do.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
What they do then, Greg, is they what you go out and work hard for, you trade your time and labor for dollars, and then they take part of that in the form of taxes to replace what was never existed, the money they printed out of air.
Yeah, I know. It's amazing. We have a bill, actually, that would eliminate withholding tax during the time you're earning your standard deduction. And that's one of the ways that we can fight back on this. And so what that bill would do, very simply, is you do not have any money withheld from your paycheck until you've exceeded your standard deduction, because that's the money that's going to be taxed. They don't tax money, you know, that's under your standard deduction. They give that back to you in a refund, okay? So why are we waiting a year in a refund when we can have that money this year? I don't have to wait. I shouldn't have to wait next year having them withhold money, you know, use it for their own, you know, nefarious purposes and then have it sent back to, and then have to apply to get it back. So we have a bill to not take it in the first place.
Well, I got a surprise.
That's what we do around here. What's that?
Your W-4, your standard W-4, don't allow that unless you claim a lot of dependents.
No, this is a law change.
But listen to what I want to tell you.
Okay.
If you claim 9, of course, you hardly have any money taken out. You don't want to go above 9. You do 10, they're going to look at it. But a pensioner, the W-4P, it has right there on the form. You can check a box. Don't take no money out of my payment, out of my income.
Hmm.
So they allow for pensioners on the form, but regular W-4, they don't allow it.
Yeah.
There's no place to indicate. Now, of course, you go do a law, that'd be fine, but I'm just telling you the way it is now.
Oh, no, I know withholding still exists, and I didn't know there was a way around it for pensioners, so that's good to know. But this is for, you know, regular wage earners, you know, that the idea is it makes no sense to take money that the government's going to give back anyway and give them the use of it for a year. That's just stupid. You know, you should have the use. It's your money.
I agree.
Yeah. Okay, good. No, support the bill. Good. We'll get it out there. We also have a bill for a 30-day comment period for any appropriation over $100 million, which is, I think, most of them these days, that goes through a 30-day comment period. So not only can the press take a look, you know, citizens can take a look, but actually Congress can take a look because they don't read their bills. And this would give them an opportunity. And then we can put a reading requirement in there that they actually read it, you know, and then sign that they read it. You know, we can do that too. But at least that 30 days, they'll be forced to read it when people start uncovering, you know, citizens and journalists uncover all the nasty stuff that's in these bills, like the one that was just found on, what was it? We talked about that earlier today. I was in the defense bill. Oh, yeah, the red flag laws in the defense bill. Jim Dykes brought that up. All right. Article.
Well, it's supposed to show up in the Federal Registry. The Federal Registry is there for citizens to read.
That's regulations.
The regulations, the registry. Registry basically gives account. It's nothing more than a journal or what do you want to call it, diary of what's going
on. Yeah, that's right. So all bills, resolutions, and regulations, too, they have to be in there for comment. You know, that's what the regulation comes from.
Yeah, the people have a
right
to look at them.
Yep. Yeah, I misspoke, as they say. So, yeah, Federal Register is supposed to have everything. Yeah, in fact, it's funny. They publish a regulation in the Register, and then it becomes law if nobody objects. Give me a break.
Now, you know the thing about the Federal Registry? If you
What's go that?
Back during the time of recordings, when Congress was contemplating the 13th and 14th Amendment, and I think it was 30 states at that time, but I'm not sure, there was not enough states that ratified either one of those.
Which ones? Which amendments?
According to the Federal Register. 13th, 14th. 13th, slavery
states?
To 14th. No.
Are you sure?
There was not enough space that said we agree. Yes, you can read it. You can go back and read the registry and count the representatives that was there said aye.
Well, that's interesting. See, I've heard about that for the Federal Reserve Act and for the income tax. that those were not. That's Congress. They didn't have the votes to pass. But one of those is the income tax amendment to the Constitution. I've heard that didn't have enough states to ratify it, and yet there it is.
Yeah, Philander North calls that while people was on Christmas break, I think, and the income tax law.
Anyway,
wasn't enough.
Yeah. I'm going to finish the article in a minute. I'm going to take a minute break, and I'll be right back.
Action Radio. Part of the ADHD Radio Network. The ultimate free speech zone. We the people give our consent to be governed through writing the laws by which we are governed and have the power through juries to nullify the laws by which we do not consent to be governed. At Action Radio, we don't report the news. We are the news. Every other show reports what has happened. We talk about what can happen. From the questions no one has thought to ask, to the answers no one has thought to consider, to the actions no one has dared to take. That is Action Radio.
You know, this 3 hours, I'm getting hungry. I have to bring more food. You know, more food to my I got a couple of tables here that are operated off. So, you know, you don't want to put food in your computer table, but I'm getting hungry. So we'll be off here in about 10 minutes left. Anyway, Batch's article, American Institute for Economic Research, James Bovard, September 21st. Gene, you got something?
Yeah, hold on. The person on the chat is still talking about the election and that illegal aliens have the right to vote under the Constitution. But really, they don't have the right to vote. Well, depending on their immigration status, but if you're not legal citizen of this country, that's part of the reason to be able to vote if you are a legal citizen.
Wait. This is interesting. No. See, I want to follow. So read the live chat exactly. I may stop you partway through this. This is too important to miss.
Well, they still were talking about that they got more votes, and then illegal aliens have rights under the Constitution while they're residing in the country, even if illegal. They have freedom of speech, religion, due process, and equal protection. Greg is not correct. They don't have. What? Greg is not correct. They don't have rights. He needs to check that out.
Okay, let
those
me
rights
also
apply to everyone,
you know,
whether they are a citizen or not.
I've got live chat.
Well,
I can read this too. This is great.
Illegals don't have a right to vote in a state. They could be counted as because they're a person. That's the same argument
they
had with slaves.
No, you can't count them either. We had a whole bill on that. We went over that. You cannot count illegal aliens at all. First of all, they can't be here, so they can't be counted. Okay, they do not have rights here because the Constitution and the 14th Amendment is very clear that let me pull it up here. Go ahead. I'll prove.
They can be counted for apportionment, Greg. That's the argument that was had with the three-fifth compromise with slaves.
No, illegal aliens can't pay taxes. So I don't care about the ITIN number.
They do with the pay.
We said apportionment. Because they don't vote. They can't be accounted in the apportionment of a state in terms of congressional representation because they can't vote.
It's not about voting. It's not about voting. It's about the apportionment in order to determine your legislative, your representative, your congressional representation.
Yeah, but you don't count illegal aliens in that because they can't vote.
Well, they are counting them, right?
I know.
Didn't Trump
want
on the census
that's not legal
to indicate whether? Well, yeah, wait a minute. Hang on for a second. The court has said you could do it. The court said it with Donald Trump,
and that's
when
a
he
wrong
wanted
decision.
To have.
That's an incorrect decision. They screwed up.
Well, if it's an it may be an incorrect decision, but they are being counted.
Oh, I know. Okay, I'm not trying to get after you, but you're absolutely right. They are being counted. What I'm saying is it's not legal. We even had a bill, you know, mandating the citizenship question on the census. That's the whole point of Trump wanting to put the citizenship question back into the census is because there's no reason to count non-citizens because they can't vote. Listen,
well,
they've done
the same thing with slaves, right?
In terms of what?
Didn't the southern states Then the southern states not want to count the slaves? I'm sorry, the northern states did not want the southern states to count the slaves, because if they did, they would have had more congressional representation. Or
you're thinking
with
of
the northern states.
I think that's the Dred Scott decision, unless I'm wrong, which I could be. I'm not.
No, that wasn't the Dred Scott decision.
Okay, all right. So was it Plessy Ferguson? I know there's these famous Supreme Court cases.
With the Three-Fifths Compromise. That was to do with
what they're saying was freed black slaves. They wanted black, I guess, either slaves or not. In other words, blacks in the South. The North didn't want blacks counted as a whole person because blacks didn't have the vote yet. Okay. So if I remember this correctly.
They didn't want black males had to vote before white women did. But here's the thing.
Okay.
Slaves were not considered citizens of the country, but they were being counted toward apportionment. In other words, so many people give you one congressperson. Okay.
Uh-huh.
And if you counted all the slaves as a whole person, then the South would have had more congressional representation than the North.
Right.
And that was then a problem.
And people think the South are the ones that wanted the three-fifths of a person for black citizens, and it simply wasn't true.
It was the North.
It was the North, yeah, because they didn't want the South to get more powerful. All right. Pianchi, do you see the live chat on your episode? I want to know if it's public, I'll mention the username.
Where to find it. Where is it at?
Okay, I don't know if you can see it. Maybe only we can see it. All right, so I'm not going to reveal the username at this point unless they want it, in which case they can just tell me. But I've got a comment here. It says we're talking about illegal aliens. It says they have freedom of speech, religion, due process, and equal protection. That's absolute nonsense. Okay.
No, they don't have that.
Let me tell you why. Okay. 14th Amendment, very clearly, all persons born or naturalized in the United States and subject to the jurisdiction thereof are citizens of the United States and of the state wherein they reside. And that means you get the privileges, immunities, and equal protection and cannot be deprived of life, liberty, or property without due process. Very simple. Okay. So the question is, all persons born or naturalized in the United States, that would be citizens, okay, and subject to the jurisdiction thereof, okay? Subject to the jurisdiction. That's not geographical, folks. That's citizenship jurisdiction. This is the thing that everybody gets wrong. I've been through the original debate from the 14th Amendment. Hold on, Pianchi. I got to get this clear. We only got 4 minutes left. Our user here to – first of all, thank you for using the live chat. This is working out really well. Okay, but the question very simply is that unless you are subject to citizenship jurisdiction in the United States, you know, you're not part of the Constitution. It's very simple. Now, those that are not, illegal aliens born on U.S. soil to foreign nationals, those foreign nationals are subject to their country's citizenship jurisdiction, not ours. And that is why illegal aliens born on U.S. soil are not Americans. I know that's the policy. It's not a law, and it's certainly not in the Constitution, because the Constitution and the 14th Amendment says exactly the opposite. So the Constitution applies to American citizens, and it applies to naturalized, you know, both naturalized and natural born, and to a certain extent to lawful immigrants with permanent resident status. But when I was a permanent resident, when I had a green card, I couldn't serve on a jury and I couldn't vote.
Let me give you another example.
Okay.
Affirmative action programs that come out of the Civil Rights Act, which was meant for blacks, native black American foreigners that's come here, whether they're legal or illegal, are not privileged to them. Because they didn't go through that experience. Simple as that. Even when you fill out a scholarship application, they ask you, are you a citizen of the United States?
Yep. Oh, yeah, absolutely. Sure. Job application, E-Verify. You have to say because non-citizens can't work here. So here's the thing first of all, I want to thank our user. I had no idea there's this much conversation. Gene, when we get this much conversation, please let me know. This is fabulous. That people are using our chat, you know, so fast and so much. But here's the thing, and I would ask the user, if you're still listening, you got about 2 minutes left to answer this question. How do people who have no right to be here have rights here? Intellectually impossible. It's irrational. You can't have rights in a place that you can't be in. If you can't be here, how can you argue that people have rights here? That makes no sense. And people will quote Supreme Court cases and they'll say this is the way it is, and they'll go by their assumptions, which are wrong, because for most people, assumptions are stronger than truth. But you cannot say that people that have no right to be here have rights here, because that's irrational. That's intellectually impossible. That's why I say they don't have rights here. It's very simple. That's why we can take their stuff. Any questions, anybody?
No, I don't
right.
have any.
Well, I see where you're talking. We're bumper jack.
Oh, see, my question is, oh, too. You did? Oh, so it is public then?
Bumper jack five.
Should be, yes.
Oh, okay. Well, in that case, I'm going to start mentioning usernames. Okay. Bumperjack 5, first of all, thank you for your participation, but you're completely wrong, and I'm happy to talk with you about this anytime. You can
Citizen
text in.
Action. Who is Citizen Action, Gene?
That's us, I think. Is that you, Gene?
Yep, that's us.
She had this whole conversation. I didn't even know about it. Oh, that's okay. That's cool. We got a minute and a bit left. Let me see if I can finish this this article real quickly. First of all, thank you, everybody, for a great show today. This has been fun. Anyway, so Bobert says most of the victims, this is of the banks, you know, secrecy stuff, were legal businesses such as jewelry stores, restaurants owners, gas station owners, scrap metal dealers, and others. Probably the same people judged non-essential and had their businesses locked down during COVID. The IRS, back to the article, the IRS targeted businesses with legal sources of income because, quote, the Department of Justice had encouraged task forces to engage in, quote, quick hits where property was more quickly seized rather than pursuing cases with other criminal activity such as drug trafficking and money laundering, which are more time-consuming, the Inspector General warned. Let me just leave you with that. The article, I posted before, I'll post it again, but think of this. They went after the honest people because it's easier to see stuff from honest people than to go after the criminals. What does that tell you about the law? Yeah. All right. We've got, I'll figure out this live chat here. It says the laws, he's got another bumper check, another comment. The laws apply because you're on U.S. soil. Not true.
Great.
The difference between citizenship jurisdiction and geographical, I just figured that out. Yeah, go ahead. Bianchi, last comment. We're almost out, we are out of time.
Leave it alone. You already got your hands full.
Okay, I'll leave Gene to the live chat. Gene, we'll talk off air. We'll figure this out. But thank you all very much. We got to go. Wow, what a great show. Back next week. We're going to start at 6 o'clock Central, 7 o'clock Eastern. We got 3 hours, and it's Action Radio just keeps growing, expanding, and doing more of what we do best. Greg Penglis for Action Radio at blogtalkradio.com/citizenaction. Talk to you next week.
Have a great day.
The Arizona, and watch the Arizona audit. Watch the Arizona audit. All right. Back later.